missed you so much.
This is a good day.
Dear Asami, where'd you come from, little cutie?
Dear Cora, I'll destroy you.
Your fiancé?
What do you mean?
This can't be happening.
Well done. She seems very threatening.
Look how cute!
Does this mean I'm the master now?
Actually, we're doing fine.
How?
And then she dies.
Think someone is pulling your chain, Gumdrop.
Are you kidding me?
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
We're talking minimum 4 hours.
We'll always have Kale.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongBlueFang.net. I am your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
Ben.
Likes to hear I'm back.
Allie.
Good morning.
Delaney.
Hello.
Sure, that's accurate.
And Jeff.
Oh,
boys! How about your actual voice so people can...
He's been waiting.
Jeff, like, I love
no, hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Okay, here's Jeff.
That's great.
Guess what I'm doing next podcast.
Yeah.
This is going to be a crazy one. Today, we'll be discussing Beyond the Wild, the 9th episode of Book 4 of Legend of Korra, and it is the 150th From the Spirit World podcast. Hooray.
Hooray.
Congratulations.
Oh.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know we're that old.
Yeah, I mean, also from 2007 or 8 or whatever.
I told you about Dylan's helium voice.
Yeah, you can go. I mean, you can listen to the old black podcast on iTunes. Anyway, big episode to discuss today. I apologize for any sound quality problems. My charger died right before we started recording on an old computer. Lots of stuff going wrong, but hopefully we'll get the podcast in.
A 6-year-old computer.
You think even older than that? Yeah. Like, well, I guess that's how math works.
Why do you still have it?
Because it still works.
Yeah, really.
Okay. Okay, we're going to a lot to get to. Beyond the Wild is an incredibly notable episode. Info on the podcast at the end. First, the only news is that the finale has a date because I pestered Nick on Twitter enough. December.
The smiley face.
December 19th. Yeah, I did like 10 times with no smiley face. Then I did a smiley face and
the
smiley answer.
The only thing I understand is smiley face.
Anyway, December 19th. It's what we expected. Looks like a 2-part finale. So there's 3 weeks of Korra left.
Can we not talk about that, though?
3 weeks. Okay, anyway.
88 minutes.
Expect extensive finale coverage from this podcast, possibly 3 or even 4 podcasts that weekend.
Oh, my God. Okay, I'm taking off school.
This is the time. It's the weekend, so, you know.
Well, not for me. Probably be a Monday.
Okay, time difference, yeah. Also, it's not morning for you. It's afternoon, so... I know you're. Allie's in Japan, so she's 14 hours ahead. Anyway, let's talk about...
Yeah, as if they don't get it now. I said good morning.
Yeah. Let's talk about Beyond the Wilds. Again, the ninth episode written by Josh Hamilton, directed by Ian Graham, storyboarded by Steve, Chris, our friend Will, Joanne Matt, the great Joanne Matt, and Carly Scutieri. And tons to discuss. Oh, also of note is the clip is going to come out while we're recording this.
Can we live respond?
Yeah.
Respond to the clip.
Oh, yeah, and if any of you have to leave because we're going too late, just let me know in chat and just... I'll say fire.
You can't get
anyway,
back, but okay.
Yeah, we're gonna probably live
for
discuss the clip.
For us old men,
hey.
We have to go to work.
I don't know how I'm gonna do that with this computer.
It's okay, you'll be vacationing soon.
And again, if I sound weird, it's because I'm using a different microphone. Let's talk Beyond the Wilds. Tell me, there's 5 of you, so let's try to keep this briefer than normal. Tell me what you thought of the episode, and just one notable thing. Let's start with Mel.
Okay, so... My thing with this episode is it got really good in the third act, and it unfortunately felt like most of the episode was leading up to the third act, and the attack with the spirit vines was just an inciting incident to get us to Zaheer. That being said, once she was with Zaheer, I thought that whole sequence was really cool. So.
Cool. Okay. Let's go to Ben.
Really enjoyed this episode. Maybe... It's one of my favorites, if not my favorite, of Book 4 thus far. And Napoleon Dynamite's back.
He's back. He also voices himself and his dad.
I know. That's
great. Great.
Right.
And I just saw him as Napoleon Bonafrog or whatever in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, good. That's how's that show been?
Well, we're 6 episodes into Season 3, and they're still not in New York City, so...
What? Are they in the zoo? I don't know anything about teenage.
No, they're not in the city, and in these episodes they've been spoofing a lot of horror films.
They in Petco?
Anyway, wow. let's move back to a show that Nick doesn't support from a show that Nick does support. Allie, what did you think of this episode?
I think you meant it backwards.
No, that was right. I was right.
Oh, never mind. I mean, I really enjoyed it, but like what Mel said, I wasn't really like. I mean, I was invested in it, but it really didn't get interesting until the third act, or when she mentioned I want to face Sahir, but we'll get to that later. One thing I didn't like was the fact that they made Jenora just get captured again, but we'll talk about that later, too, and I'm sure you'll have something to say about it. But
yes.
I really liked it. This goes right below Korra Alone for me, because nothing can ever beat that episode.
Delaney. Mm.
I really enjoyed this episode. I agree with pretty much what everyone else has said so far, but my big thing is Lynn! Lynn is in this episode! And Lynn does stuff. And Lynn, oh my god, oh, yeah. Next episode, too much feels
Yeah, they're related!
It's great, Lynn, yes.
I did say that.
Those are my thoughts, Lynn.
And Jeff.
Mel forgot that Opal and Lynn were related, so.
I thought it was a really busy episode, and I enjoyed it a lot, but they covered a lot of ground, so, you know, I did feel a bit rushed now and then, but they're just going here and there and everywhere.
They're just going. So,
yeah.
Go hard or go home.
Yeah, yeah.
And, Energizer Bunny.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. No, we're recording this podcast later than normal. I've gotten 4 watches, and I've actually, like, enjoyed every single scene of the episode every single time. Like, wow. This is very rare. I think I actually disagree with the Acts 1 and 2 are slow. Like, I actually really like Acts 1 and 2. So overall, this is, I think, the best episode since Korra Alone, and it's one of the top 10 episodes of the series. It's extremely good. I think that the questionable thing is whether the third act gets there. Like, does it transcend into this incredible territory? Like, its counterpart in book 3 does. This episode's very analogous to The Stakeout. Both episodes feature a third act, which have Korra and Zahir just talking. And the first two acts are kind of, I think actually the first two acts of this episode are better than the first two acts of The Stakeout.
I agree.
I really like these two. But this is less of a complete episode than The Stakeout. It doesn't come together as well, and it's not as incredible in the third act. I still really loved it. It's questionable whether they handle Korra's mental recovery well. I have extensive posts and discussion to get to on this, and I just love Opal, and I really am interested to see where they go with her. Okay, let's start with Act 1.
Take a breath.
Since I probably won't be here for the extensive discussion of mental illness, as someone who has suffered with mental illness, I agree they probably rushed it a bit, but, you know, then again, 13 episodes of a show, I don't know what else you can do.
Yeah, that's basically what Sam has to say about it. She doesn't like how quickly it's resolved here, I don't know. I don't know if I agree. It's kind of hard to tell. We'll try to get to it before midnight. Okay, let's do that.
It's a tough subject to tackle.
Yeah, and we have discussed it extensively in about two of the podcasts this season, and we're going to do it again now because they keep getting
fantastic.
To us. They keep doing
Hooray.
It.
I think we have to change the name of our podcast to the Mental Illness Hour.
And
that's another podcast.
The Mental Illness and Social Issues podcast, yeah. Exactly.
That's another podcast. So.
Yeah. Okay, Act 1. We have the clip. Ryu and his parents. Ryu is giving Spirit Wild to. Okay, so this whole 90-second scene. I actually think it's really phenomenal. Like, I didn't appreciate it the first time.
Airbender ever.
It's just so. Why are the Airbenders giving tours of the Spirit Wilds?
They have nothing else to do.
Ryu,
because he's terrible. Of course they're making him do this.
I don't understand. No, but
there's some
complicated backstory where the Airbenders had to show up to keep balance, and in so doing he had to sub in to give a tour for someone.
And that's why
he has note cards.
Later they specify Ryu's tour, so I assume he's not the only one giving tours.
Oh, goodness.
So we have the reporter guy. This is the guy, I'm pretty sure, who they're throwing in random scenes in book 1.
He was so great, though.
He must be, like, super low tier, because this is, like, a 3-year-old story that they're just sending him in. Hey, go do the Spirit Mines.
Yeah, that's true.
You got nothing else going on.
Yeah, why is he reporting on this? It's not news. Okay, anyway.
Are we in the spirit world right now?
Yeah, exactly.
The spirit world
doesn't know
us.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna poke it with a stick.
You know what I love about those lines is that it's not clear whether they're in the spirit world and the real world's merged, so that's a good question.
They're not in the spirit world.
No, that's a legitimate question.
They're
like,
in the world.
Not.
What's the wilds? What is the wilds?
They're beyond the wilds.
They're beyond the wilds. Yeah. What does that title even mean? What is that episode? Oh,
it means the spirit world is beyond the wilds.
It means nothing.
Well, if you consider the vines to be the wilds,
I'm gonna poke it with a stick. The vines capture everyone, and I think the scene's just really good. Maria Bamford is incredible as Ryu's mom.
I love her so much.
She's the best.
And John Hader is incredible again. I'm glad they got him back, and Ryu's great. And yeah, I don't know. Just starting. This is the strongest opening scene of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know about that.
Of like Nickelodeon's logo plastered over the reporter guy's like, I'm gonna poke the fandom with a stick.
Yes.
Yeah, let's make that meme. Okay. Cora is here's how I'd describe it. Cora's playing Chase the Light Pointer with Naga.
Like the laser, yes.
Yeah, like the laser pointer, yeah.
That's what she's doing.
Naga's like in Mocking Che.
Except Naga's not a cat, but that's okay.
Dogs do that too.
Does it work with dogs?
Yes. Yeah. Dogs
okay.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
On how
okay.
How stupid they are.
Understood.
That's awful.
Trust me, I have two dogs, and they both did that.
Opal comes up and says, "Kavir has my family, and no one seems to care about me." You know, I agree, Opal. There's not a lack of urgency right now.
Consider the scene. Cora's just playing.
Yeah,
she was totally gonna come and tell Cora off though, because you saw that face. And then when Cora was like, "Are you okay?" she was like, I guess it's not your fault, but like, I'm still
nice.
Man.
Yeah,
she's a nice person.
She thinks she's too cute. #Corporal.
We'll get there when we get there.
No, that's exactly what happened. She was like, "Oh, she looks so cute. I can't yell at her now." Yeah. That's exactly what happened.
I mean, there's some Corporal evidence in this season. Anyway,
yes,
Corporal
there is.
Cora, no
Corporal. Corporal, that's a ship name.
Corporal.
I ship it.
Ooh. It's actually a good ship name. Anyway,
it's almost good as Katniss and Peeta.
Yeah, almost. But that's almost. The best ship name. So.
Can we that say that?
No, you cannot. Janoris.
Don't say it.
Janoris
just
sends
a ship
as
too tempting.
Don't say it. As Delaney said on Tumblr, Janoris senses a disturbance in the force from the spirit
exactly
world.
Yeah.
And the Bob Squad reunites, which is the best. Literally, I can't describe how great it is to have those three together. Three out of the five best characters in the show.
That is really
incredible.
Great, actually.
Speaking of which, where was the song?
Yeah, speaking
she
of which,
have a bob cut.
She has one scene. We'll get to that.
She glares at it.
She could just cut her hair, you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
Well, but like, no, she shouldn't cut her hair.
Her hair is Asami. Asami's hair. Okay, Cora.
She cuts it, what should be?
Cora taps into the vine to see how strange the energy is.
Maybe I can get a reading. I was really confused by that line.
Yeah, maybe I can get a reading. Yeah.
Maybe I can get a reading. I was like, what on point?
Sees Mecha Tanks harvesting vines from the Banyan Grove tree, and if you look closely enough, one of the vines does fight back. And,
yeah, I didn't see that at first. Yeah.
And we also see Kuvira with Robbie and Steve, which I'm so happy.
Wait, really? I didn't look closely enough.
Wait, I didn't see that.
Oh my god!
Wait,
wow, the ship wars. The ship wars have come. Kuvi, back.
Kuvi forever.
Wait, what are you talking about?
If you didn't listen to the podcast on episode 5 or 6, I can't remember which one. It's 6, right? I don't remember. Kuvira's top two generals have been named Robbie and Steve by Judge.
Oh, I did listen to that. Okay.
I didn't listen to that, but
anyway.
I also...
And there's and you have to figure out which one you ship. Robbie and Kuvira, Robbie and Steve or... No, Robbie and Steve. That's the third one. Anyway.
Robbie and Steve.
That's the third one. Okay. Cora thinks that... that's affecting Republic City Spirit Wilds, the swamp. Janora is going to keep looking, and then Corpo goes to see Raiko. See, use of Corporal.
I keep thinking you're saying Corporal.
K-O-R-P-A-L.
I also hear Corporal, like bodily. Yeah.
Corporal is actually a thing right away, because Cora and Opal have a great scene in 305 of them doing the airbending together. It's so cute. Anyway.
We shipped it.
I shipped it for like an episode.
Also shipped Tang for an episode. I don't forget that.
You did?
Oh my god, it was so great.
Traitor!
It was to troll. That was young troll.
He says now, 6 years later.
Yeah, I didn't know what trolling was at the time, but it was to troll, okay?
Oh my god.
Okay, so now we're at a leader's meeting. Wu wants to send Kuvira on an all-expenses-paid vacation to a tropical island. Boom.
Let's him out of the house.
And then it turns out to be a person. Boom, got her. Of note is Mako is here, theoretically resuming his job, which he's terrible at. He also wants to send an army of highly trained badger moles. Did we get where is that line from? I feel like I've heard that before.
I've heard that before as well.
It's because he had the dancers. He had the dancing badger moles.
Oh, okay. So
it's into the Badgemal.
He just really likes
Badgemal. He just loves. I mean, who doesn't love Badgemal?
I mean, it's supposed to be a 4-hour event.
I put them in the top five animal hybrids.
Six-hour event.
Anyway, yeah, Badgemal? It was a 6-hour. Yeah, Raiko and Lin want to take the fight to her
because Lin wants to rescue her family. Oh,
and Raiko's just like, this is something.
We need to talk about Raiko, because now, when Batu was going to destroy the world, he was like, no, I need to keep my army here. And now that, it's just a person.
Batu didn't vote for him, so he didn't
stop.
He's the worst president. Can they impeach him?
He's an idiot.
He's terrible.
Batu, did he vote for me?
Just because he's inconsistent doesn't mean he's, bad or an idiot, you know?
He's just an idiot.
Vote for me? Maybe it's a different situation, anyway.
Cora, did you vote for me?
I think a spirit turning the world dark for 10,000 years is worse than, a dictator.
Yes.
But then, could he, do anything against the spirit?
That's the
he
thing. Couldn't. Here there's a clear solution.
Maybe.
Right?
He could ask the spirit to vote for him.
Okay.
Exactly.
We're kind of obsessed with this voting thing.
He's a president, and I want to know who keeps voting for him. He's still president.
You invited him, but not me, Cora says twice.
Favorite line.
Yeah. Again. Him, not me.
Not me.
And Wu wanted to invite her, which is great. I love that. Yes. Wu's a sweetheart. Great. Yeah, and then
wait, hold on. Are you shipping Wu Cora or something?
No, Wuko for life. I'm not betraying Wuko. Okay, Tenzin thought back. Yeah, Tenzin thought that this would be Cora. Thought maybe they brought Cora back into action too soon.
That's the best part. The
Bolin and Varric barge in. They have top secret info. They should have opened with that. It's a super weapon, and it's like a weapon, but it's super.
I love how this keeps happening. They just run in every time there's a meeting. They all run in.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Tenzin,
it's how many guards are there?
Tenzin won't be part of an unprovoked attack, and Honora speaks.
Yes.
Hashtag nonsense wars.
She's voiced by Rava.
Honora is voiced by April Stewart. Rava. One of those two characters is not terrible. The answer is Honora.
One of them is not Captain Obvious. Yeah. And it's
even more so than Tenzin and Rava just
Rava
need to
likes to speak on the ghost because she doesn't have one.
She does.
No, I get it.
There's too much.
Okay, two things just happened. I can't tell how many people are laughing at me and how many are laughing at Dylan. It's upsetting me.
What did I didn't say anything funny, I don't think. Too much of it.
Thanks for me.
Too much of it.
Yeah, I'm laughing at email. It's good.
Oh, because I made a joke before.
Kill you.
Too much of its history is spent fighting nonsense wars, says
hashtag.
Honora, unless there's no other choice. Oh, by the way, of course, Raiko introduces Honora to the audience by pronouncing Fire Lord Honora. What are you? As promised, we're not calling her by her name. That will not be uttered. Okay, and that's not a plot twist, though.
The Fire Nation didn't attack.
That's a plot twist indeed. That's not how you would address someone. You would just say theoretically, you could call her by her first name. You know, not Fire Lord Honora.
Well, no, that's disrespectful.
You don't. Nobody calls her Cora, which made me mad.
I guess you do. Cora. They might call her President. They might call him President Raiko, but Fire Lord is different, right?
They could just literally call her the Fire Lord or Fire Lord.
Yeah,
Miss Fire Lord.
With titles like that, you generally tend to refer to them by their title and nothing else.
She says she'll
help. Yeah, I mean, they always called Zuko Fire Lord Zuko, I assume.
We didn't really have too much of him being...
Well, in the comics, though, no?
I don't care.
I haven't read them, so I'm not even...
She'll help...
Never mind.
She'll help fortify the borders. What do you guys think of Honora?
She's May's daughter, and
she's fine.
You just said Suki, right? I couldn't hear you
quite
well.
It's May. Suki is not a thing. Stop corrupting
everyone. I'm pretty sure you said Suki. I'm not sure.
Dylan, I swear I'm going to throw Suki 5 at the computer. I will control
her. Other than clearly resembling her mother, Suki, what do you guys think of Honora?
She is literally May, but okay.
Oh my god.
She seems stern but kind.
I'm not even gonna engage.
This is the type of answer I'm looking for.
I'm just waiting for your computer to break again.
There's five of you. What of you could have said? She seems stern but kind. I would be like, that's a good assessment, Dylan. Okay, thanks, Dylan. Okay, let's move on.
What does that mean? Wow.
That means what? I mean, what do you think of her character?
What argument are you making?
What's happening anymore?
Tell
she
me
seems
something.
Like a good mix of Zuko and Mei.
And Suki, got it. Okay, it's a little late for Sorry. Wow.
She looks like Mei.
Okay, so now we get the first of many Opal scenes. Wow.
Yes.
It's a little late for Sorry. Wow, that does sound bad. Then Opal brings Lin brings Opal over.
Yes. Right, because it's what?
unsanctioned and dangerous mission. They need to go alone. And then
so the last time they did, or the last time Lynn did, like went off
on your face
and went rogue, she got a new outfit. I'm hoping she does another one again.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
Ooh, no, but she was wearing the same outfit when she was on the Bison.
Dylan, what's the password to your Tumblr?
As long as the trench coat comes back, that's all I want. I need the trench coat again.
Wow. Okay. They have.
Wait. Also, can we talk about how dumb this idea is? I'm sorry, but
it's a really bad idea.
It's a terrible idea, but I'm glad it's happening.
This is what got them captured in the first place.
Yes.
I mean, hello. Yeah.
Anyway, we have a Fireferrets reunion and hug, and then they hug again. And
that was cute. But
oh, are we going to talk how, like, Cora had, like, this ridiculous grin, and everyone
yeah,
like,
so
yes,
Bolin,
everyone's like, Bolin, and she's, like, grinning like an idiot. I'm
Bolin,
like, yes.
Bolin comes, and everyone's, like, surprised and neutral, and
then
she
just
Cora grins. Just yeah, it's really cute.
I love her.
Cora's
I didn't notice
so
until the second rewatch, and I was like, I have to make a post about this, that she's grinning like an idiot, and I love it.
I love that Cora cares so much about Bolin. That's so cool.
Yes.
Anyway.
Cora cares about everybody but Asami.
Everyone else was like, who's Bolin?
Yeah, exactly.
Bolin, and then she's just grinning.
Who's Avatar Cora?
Who's Avatar Cora?
And they're like, Cora, who are you grinning at? I don't see anyone there.
It's plot twist, yeah. Then Bolin says he's an idiot twice, or what, three times, or who cares, and okay, we're moving on.
Idiot. That's a sentence.
Jenora is captured by Spirit Vines in an extensive sequence of Jenora flying around doing stuff.
An extensive sequence of ADR.
Pull back!
Yes.
Akko wasn't as much of a jerk as he could have been, because he was like,
I know,
an idiot.
Just...
I thought he was... I was so worried
just
he wasn't
funny.
Even going to apologize. And
Mako
I was just like,
is
oh.
very...
Mako doesn't know what the word apologize means.
He was very annoying this episode,
he was
but
very
mainly because he
I agree.
Didn't talk.
He was very sympathetic this episode, mainly because he stays in
no,
the background.
No, he's not sympathetic. He's just not a thing.
He's
I think,
a wall.
Yeah. I found
yeah,
him,
he's literally... He's Cora's shadow.
I think he was
episode.
Sympathetic. Anyway, we'll get to him and Cora's interactions
later. It could have literally been any other character. It didn't have to be Mako.
Could have been Asami.
What they did with Asami last episode, they did with Mako this episode. Like, Asami, like... talking about the Avatar stuff, that was Mako in this episode. Like, it could have been literally any other character.
Could have been Asami!
I'm gonna disagree, but we'll get there.
We could have had it all! Oh, where's Sam?
Jenora is captured by Spirit Vine. She is awesome, flying around fighting them. She gets captured, the astral projects to Cora and says, help.
Help,
and...
basically.
So, okay,
help.
So let's talk.
Also,
let's talk.
Ron Kenobi. Leave.
What, Dally?
Why did Bolin just leave? Like, it's just those two. I was
yeah.
like, no.
It's not they manipulated like who's where
that
just to get
dumb.
The story going. Whatever, who cares? More
like,
importantly,
Ren was like, "Where did Mako come from?" Like exactly.
More importantly, let's go over the times Jenora has been captured by the enemy. Okay. Time number one, season one, when Tenzin's entire family is captured. Time number
can you
two,
rate them?
I will rate them after we're done.
Well, number one worse is Unalaq.
Time number two is Unalaq captures her in a new spiritual age in
Ooh.
A terrible sequence. And time number three kind of a branch off of this, she gets put into the prison thing. What's it called again?
Air bison thing?
No. The
No, when
the spirit world. What's it called again?
The Fog of Lost Souls.
Fog of Lost Souls, yeah.
Yes.
That's kind of the same one, but she's still captured in a different episode.
Did you just say never mind.
Time number three in episode 304, a guard takes her up. She's not captured for very long, but then Kai like airbends to get her down in Ba Sing Se. Time number five is when is time number five?
When they all get
when
captured
they,
by
when,
your
No. Time number five.
The
is,
air bison. When
is
they
the air bison them. In original Airbenders, and Kai has to save her then. And time number six is going to be Jenora getting captured along with everyone else by Zahira in the finale. And now we have time number seven, when Jenora is captured by Spirit Vines.
Lucky seven.
There you go.
Like,
this is my argument. Why are you capturing Jenora so often? She's a very competent character. She's an airbending master. You are degrading. Like, this is not an interesting plotline. It makes sense to do this in this context, in this episode. It's more justified than any of the other ones. But I'm just completely tired of it. They're mangling her character this season.
It shouldn't have been Jenora.
Yeah, it shouldn't have been Jenora.
She's
no one else could astral.
Of...
The thing was is that no one else could astral project to go tell Cora that they were being captured.
Yeah, that makes
problem.
Sense, but, like, she's too, like, competent to get kidnapped again like that.
She should
be a master airbender.
I agree with that. It's just the reason they did it is because they needed someone to tell Cora they were being captured, not next
so
Cora.
Dumb.
Yeah, but it's dumb.
Anyway, the worst is still Unalaq in the new spiritual age.
Who?
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Okay, Act 2.
Sorcerer from the North.
Korra and Mako enter the Spirit Wilds. The vines attack them. They go into this abandoned building, and then they see the pods. Hashtag
also,
pods.
Wait, time out. They were, like, attacking hashtag the vines. Matrix. I was like, do you really think this is a good idea to be firebending at the vines? Like, where does that get you? Nowhere.
For real.
Probably
dead. On the other side of that wall.
Their spirits are trapped in the spirit world. Korra tries unlocking the pods. Unlocking.
Who?
Okay. I don't understand why she thinks this would work. She's tried this several times.
I thought this would have the opposite effect.
The first time she tried it, she blew up a building.
Yeah, like, look, yeah. Korra, we've established that everything Unalaq taught you is completely pointless and book two has no meaning. So why are we gonna try this again?
Book two is the episode one of...
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, it's not... Obviously, it's not gonna work. Anyway,
book two has some good things.
I mean, like, yes, but it's...
Look, it's the Great Divide!
I'm not trying to insult Book 2's quality. I'm just saying everything plot-wise Whatever. That happened in Book 2 is irrelevant. Anyway, so they're going to meditate into the spirit world, and she goes there and she...
This isn't the spirit world.
Yeah. She doesn't say it like that, but that's a ridiculous line. Jenna Varney completely saves that line by not saying it like we just said.
Star will save them.
Yeah.
It's really pretty when she...
Now I need her to say it like that, though.
I know.
Janet, if you're listening, go record that again. Like, this isn't the spirit world.
Send her a tweet at her and tell her to record that, yeah.
No, she doesn't answer my tweets
anymore. Allie gets very nervous when she tweets at
Jenna. She doesn't answer them.
She responds to
emails. She does.
She's answered every tweet.
Anyway, then there's the vision of Zaheer. Zaheer says, this is really well done. Zaheer says, you can't fight me in the poison, which is a line from the 3 finale. And then there's a new line, you can never get it out, which is like just seamlessly integrated. That's what he said, or something like
that.
And like, it's great. Like, it's like a flashback, and then it takes on.
Oh my god, I didn't even notice that.
And then it takes on its own life,
right? Like, it's great.
I don't believe you.
Well, and then it relates directly back makes a lot more sense at the end of the episode, also, which
yeah,
is
true.
Nice.
This is why we document our conversations on Tumblr, to prove that I
Listen.
Said things.
Korra tells Mako that Zaheer has been haunting her. And he's blocking her from entering the spirit world. Okay, so here is where, if this episode were going to be a Korra episode, then this is where it would have happened, right? This is actually a big revelation. Korra has never really told anyone about this, and she's confiding in Mako.
Yeah.
And, you know, nothing really happens. He puts his hands on her shoulders, but you know what else? Who else puts her hands on Korra's shoulders in a scene we already talked about is Opal this episode. So, you know, everyone just likes...
Kuvira. So.
Yeah.
Yeah,
in a little bit more aggressive manner.
But so, like, that's the thing. I mean, we'll get into whether this episode has avert Korra or not, and I have the post.
I mean, I think I'm going to be nicer about Korra than I normally am because it was done okay.
I think this is like establishing a solid. Okay, let's talk about what this feels like to me. And someone asked me on Tumblr about this, and I thought I love this comparison. Is that this is basically the Southern Raiders, and Mako is Zuko, and Korra is Katara, and that's the relationship that's portrayed in this episode.
Yes, I agree.
It's like Mako and Zuko are both just silent, basically silent bystanders who are there to like accompany and like help, but not like do it for them. It's something that Korra and Katara need to face on their own, and they're there just for like support and to like maybe.
They're basically shadows.
Punch some things.
Like,
what like Zuko doesn't do anything in that episode, right? Like he just stands there.
He
so that's nothing. That's kind of, it's and it's, I like it because it's like that was like a great friendship episode for them, and that's the same thing that's happening here, right? So basically, what I'm saying is that if you're going to argue that this episode is overtly Korra romance, then you have to be a Zutara supporter. So there you go.
the
we are
going to
get so much
so,
exploding
in the back.
If Mare does listen to this, she'll be
pissed.
Does
not connect there whatsoever.
No, I agree, but
Dylan, if you
that was a joke, but I'm just saying, like, I think the relationship between the two characters is very similar.
I agree, but
But if they end up together at the end, is anybody here going to be like really upset about it?
We'll get there.
A little bit.
Not. I don't want to talk about that yet. Okay.
I'm not going to be here for that.
We'll get to it
you
before midnight.
You listen to it.
We want. To, we're all. We're almost.
But I can't
God. We're almost on Act 3. She wants to face Zaheer.
Wow, that actually is pretty quick.
The other.
Dylan's rushing us.
Sorry. Shush. The other way is Tonrak led expedition into the spirit world from the South Pole,
which is kind of a cool idea.
It's kind of, I like that idea. Tonric would probably not be competent enough to do that.
That's what I was thinking.
Tonric has like never won a fight.
Yeah.
On the show. Anyway.
God knows he's tried.
Think about it. He just has it. Okay.
He would either probably die or just blow something up unintentionally.
Yeah.
It's true.
Or both.
No one... Time Machine has not backed up your Mac in 1,119.99 days.
Meanwhile...
Oh my god.
That's, in the year 2008.
That's so good. Okay.
Dylan, do you have old fanfics on that computer?
Probably.
Oh, anyway. No. Guess what we're doing tonight.
No. No one thinks I'm capable of anything.
Wait, you can't type in that computer.
Yeah, well, I can if I plug and unplug. No one thinks I'm capable of anything anymore, says Cora. I know I can do this. And then Tenzin acquiesces pretty quickly.
What do we think of J.K. Simmons here? Because I think he delivered those lines pretty well.
I thought so, too.
Like, he was like, it's not that at all. Like, he sounded really, like, sympathetic.
I don't know.
He did a good job.
In comparison
to the last episode, I think he did a much
better job. I'm still not thrilled with him, but it's more of, the, like, how they write Tenzin, you know? Soon to be Oscar-nominated and potentially winner J.K. Simmons. Is one of the weaker
This is just a ploy to get not more
for,
power.
Yeah, for Tenzin. Yeah, no, for Whiplash, the new... I haven't seen it yet. Anyway, Zaheer is imprisoned deep in the mountains outside the city.
Is that safe?
Not in the Cave of Two Lovers. Sorry.
Yeah.
That is just very obvious.
That's like a dumb idea to put in there anyways. Like, you're going to rely on the Vegetables not reading enough.
No, he doesn't have love, so he can't escape.
Well, no, but like those things blow up in the dark anyway.
Exactly. Wait.
Yeah.
No.
Wait, are we forgetting the entire ending of that episode and they just glow in the dark no matter what?
No,
and
I
love
didn't,
was
I didn't
the
talk
end?
About
oh, okay.
Like, what is this love? Now I realize we're talking about Cave of Two, which case that would be so.
Look,
I thought you guys were. I don't even know what I thought you were.
Look, after seeing Interstellar, I know that love is
you
the answer
don't
to every
listen,
problem.
Listen, don't talk
okay?
about it.
Oh my
I
god!
Seen
I know that. I know that love is the answer
shut
to all the problems
up,
in the
shut
universe.
Up, shut up! Shut up!
Pab Pabs.
Mel, you're glitch.
Yeah, yeah, that was a glitch, right? Anyway. I don't think that was a lag. I think she.
No, that was me repeating myself. I'm not kidding. That was me.
When has Bolin called Pabu Pab Pabs before? Never.
I was confused about. I was like,
he sends a message to Opal that he broke both his legs.
that sounds so much like.
But look how concerned she was.
What an idiot!
I know.
No, I think more notable is how like happy she looked when Pabu came up.
Yes,
like,
no, she loves Pabu.
She's like, oh, forget his broken legs.
We haven't seen
every girl on the show is too cute, and
what?
It makes me upset.
Yes, I agree, Allie. I agree.
Who's
they're
too
all
Pabu?
Every girl on this show.
Oh yeah,
woman.
No, Opal's my number one right now, though.
Number
one bay. Anyway, that's debatable because they're all great. Opal, we haven't been seeing her happy too much, and I think it was really notable just seeing Pabu, like, makes her smile.
She loves Pabu.
Because she's a very upbeat and smiley character in book three.
Yes.
And now she's just like...
Now she's not because Bolin's the worst.
Kauai, just, are you kidding?
She's so
I pronounce
Kauai.
It like Hawaii, like the island of Kauai.
Bolin...
I spent like 4 weeks in Hawaii.
Okay, and now we get.
I spent 6 months in Japan.
You spent 4 weeks in Hawaii. What? Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, we've talked about this.
We have.
I like live there. Outside.
This is not relevant to
I
the current
this.
Discussion.
I knew
we
this.
Have my favorite episode.
Thank you, Delaney.
We have my favorite scene of the episode here. Bolin has homemade steam buns, and I'm going to read Opal's monologue.
Oh yes. No,
in its entirety.
Aww.
Wait, who wants to read it?
Me.
Uh-oh.
Send me the thing.
Okay, you don't have it open. Oh, steam buns, my favorite. This will totally make
no,
me
you're not doing
that
it
you
right.
worked for Kuvira, the person who captured my family and is probably torturing them right now. So yeah, let's sit down and have a great picnic because we're so in love. I'm sorry you had to see that, Pabu. Anyway.
It's the best thing that's ever happened.
That was, like, actually the best scene ever.
It was so great.
I know there's people listening who probably thought Opal was really unsympathetic in that scene, and I don't understand what you're thinking.
Opal's
because
like,
this is great.
We were talking about this before, but, like, I'm totally with her, and I'm happy she's, like, standing up for herself, but she really needs to, like, not get over it, but, like, Bolin is, like, he didn't, you know, be, like, capture them. Like, it wasn't his
fault.
Yeah,
but I think it's just the association. I mean, he stuck with Kuvira for a long enough amount of time, and he also defended Kuvira to Opal in the first episode.
Correct.
Before she went capturing people, but still.
Correct. Well, she was probably capturing people before that.
Well, before we
just
didn't
know. Anyway, I love because with the line because we're so in love. Like,
Yes.
Just, I love that.
I'm sorry you had to see that, Papa.
I love how both of them are great, but like, just, she's like, I don't know, just, she's like parodying like the fact that they're just like instantly like a couple when they meet each other. And
so,
I don't know, just so good. Opal's the greatest.
Yeah,
I'm so amazed by Opal's development. Like, I never thought I'd love Opal this much.
I am too. Like, her development is one of... At least her, like, personality change. I don't know if you'd call it, like, development, but, like...
Yeah, that's true.
Let's briefly discuss... Let's briefly discuss this right now, because they've spent a lot of time focusing on Opal here. And the question is, are they building up to something?
Yeah.
So the question that...
I hope so.
Are they building up to Sith Opal? That is the question.
Sith Opal? Sith. Oh my god, I didn't think of that.
Sith Airbenders.
Seriously, though.
That's a good... I didn't think about that.
So here's the scenario. Opal gets there. Next episode, they screw up, and she sees Sue killed in front of her. And
oh my god. Hey, hold on.
She goes ham. Like,
if this was on HBO.
No, seriously, yeah. I think it's possible.
I mean, we said that before the Queen got killed last season, so...
Listen.
If this were on HBO...
Yeah. None of you would tell me what happened.
We don't have to see it on screen, but I think Opal just we're searching for the real main villain of this season. Is it Opal?
Please no.
It's Kuvira.
Don't do that.
I mean,
it's Kuvira.
Theoretically, there's going to be some greater
force.
I don't think there's a secondary big bad. I think it's Kuvira.
Yeah. Kuvira, it could be that Kuvira ascends to a greater force with the new spare weapon, right?
She ascends.
Like,
Kuvira's
you know,
not ascending anywhere.
The problem is that makes you think of Unavatu. And,
she takes flight.
You know.
That's exactly what I thought of, but I still don't know who you're talking about.
She just launches into the air.
I think it's very likely that Opal could break
Starfish
away.
Starfish dive.
Starfish dive.
I think they're talking about the Airbender principles before in episode 6, and that seemed like a very deliberate line.
Yeah, I think they're leading up.
Okay,
to
so I'm gonna.
First
I'm
of all, this we know this is already Star Wars. The season.
Dylan,
right
I have
now?
Nothing to say.
Let's talk about Star Wars.
It is Star Wars, and it goes back to a very old podcast that Kevin was on. It was actually the shipping podcast, but the point is, he was talking about how in the prequel trilogy of Star Wars, how he was really annoyed when they talked about the Jedi not being allowed to like love people and have attachments because he thought it was really stupid. And then he was like, "No, wait, that's actually makes a lot of sense because here are these people with vast amounts of power, and if they get too attached to something and they lose it and they freak out and have all these emotions, then they could really hurt someone." That being said, Sith Opal.
Yeah, I know.
Airbenders have been proven to be the scariest bunch of benders because of Zaheer.
Yeah, I actually think this is where we're going. Like,
I'm scared now. I didn't even.
Well, that's interesting to think about because I could really see her being the person who kind of wants to just take Kuvira out.
She's been saying that since episode one.
I know, but I mean acting on it.
What's so appealing about this concept to me of like Opal just going crazy, like going, not crazy, but going like
going. She'll pull in Azula,
absurdly powerful, yeah. And just not good anymore. In quotes, is that to me Opal has already been completely yelling at people and is going on this mission to, like take out people, and she's still absurdly sympathetic right now. So
yes.
I would love if she was like quote unquote turned evil, but was still very sympathetic, which is likely because they've done such a good job with her character this season.
Yes.
I don't know if she'll turn evil, but I do think she, it would be nice to see her like, you know, freak out and go
ham.
Was
it her that Jenora had the conversation with where she was
yes.
vows?
Yes,
yeah.
Dude, that's the main
Who else
thesis.
Would it be? It's
that's
not
the,
gonna be
I don't know. My mic went out. I couldn't hear for
that's,
a hot,
that,
my earbuds went out.
Your mic went out. That's the main evidence for this, I think, is
deliberate
line in episode 6.
Which is interesting because you've got this situation. It's the same situation with Anakin where you're trained too late and you're not taught these foundations from the very beginning where you just spend your life living this way. Now you're thrust into it and it's not as easy to completely change your lifestyle. So once again, this season is Empire Strikes Back.
It really is. Yeah, this is very
and a little bit of Attack of the Clones.
Who's gonna have the new lightsaber?
Probably
Asami. She's gonna invent it.
She's gonna invent
it.
Asami wouldn't invent something that dumb.
Yeah, would she invent something so impractical?
That,
yeah.
She would invent something that impractical and then hand it to Mako.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
and then Mako
yes.
chops his own hands off.
Yes.
Comes up.
Happy
right
birthday!
Now.
Yes!
Use it
perfect.
I want to see you use it right now. Ah, oh, rough. Oh, we should. You're fine. You're fine.
Okay, I think
it'll grow back. It's fine.
Asami and Varric meet.
Already
with,
in my eye socket.
Meet with Reiko, and
this scene.
Varric's like, I don't want to. Reiko's like, I don't want to trust you, but
I don't like you. He and flat out said, I don't like you.
Varric's like, I allegedly did him. So I was like, everything you do is allegedly.
Everything you do is allegedly.
I love it because this is like a catchphrase for Varric, and Asami's just like, like it's actually like, coming into play in terms of a plot point, right? Like,
yes.
It's Asami like being sassy. And we all know that Asami being sassy is the number one best thing in the entire series. So.
Yes.
Sassy about business in particular.
Yeah,
yes.
Also, another thing is that Varric says he owns the cultural center, and a man has the right to blow up his own property. True or false? Is that true?
True. I mean
an false. Argument could be made.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah, why wouldn't you be allowed to blow
as long as he's stuff? Not endangering lives.
Which he probably was, so.
Yeah.
So
not probably. He was. There were people surrounding that place.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not saying in the instance it happened out. It was okay. But
I love that he said that actually because I think there's like things like this make Book 2 like make more sense and are better. Yes. Like anyway.
Of course it always and it keeps throwing Varric in like the strange we hate Varric, he does bad things, but then we're like, we love Varric. He has reasonings for everything.
He's too much of an idiot to be like
Yes.
God, there's so much to do. We haven't even gotten the Varric Julie reunion yet. Like,
which okay, so she's totally playing Kuvira, and she's gonna.
So Julie and Opal switch sides.
The problem is that like if it turns
yeah
out
they
that,
trade
if it turns out yeah, that tra- Ju- if like this is a huge plot point in the finale that oh Julie was just pretending like it's so obvious though like
I don't know
if that would be a good idea.
That's what happens before the finale.
I would love a twist where the scene plays out in a way in which she would betray Kuvira and then doesn't like and that's the twist. Like I think that'd be better.
Where Julie betrays Kuvira, so she's in charge.
Or something like that, yeah. So ooh, the actual villains actual villains of the season are Julie, Opal, and a spirit. There you go.
Yes.
Another
and a spirit.
Yes.
Well, actually, I don't think Julie has a
The real villain here is Rava, okay?
Is Co.
Preferably Co. That's what I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah,
then Varric's Reiko says the two brightest minds in the city. And
that's exactly
anyway, the scene was very short and not much Asami, but I love the potential for next episode.
You ever think about double crossing me again?
Jeff, what do you think is the way to go if you're Asami and Varric to approach counteracting Kuvira's super weapon?
Oh.
Is it like a missile defense system? Is it another super weapon?
Yeah, maybe like a field generator.
Like a field generator. Oh, ooh, because that could Varric in episode 5 or whatever.
Whoa.
That's what I was thinking, like another field kind of thing.
Like that could have been foreshadowing that. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. I'll buy that, yeah. They go into they're outside of the prison scene from the trailer. I think if I see Zaheer chained up, I'll finally realize he's not a threat anymore.
Which makes sense.
Dylan, I'm just gonna go off and say you were wrong.
I was not wrong. I think you didn't actually listen. I said I thought this was gonna happen once Jeff connected the dots.
No, because every time I was like, it's gonna happen, you were like, I don't see what going to Zaheer is gonna do for her.
So. No, I said that.
That was me, because I thought they would be stupid.
Okay, see, now we're all claiming this.
Actual misattribution.
Well, now.
Misattributing my quotes. I thought this was gonna happen. I'm not surprised with this.
I didn't want it to happen, I should say.
Critic Olivier Savard was surprised, but that Oliver Savard, but that's it. They have the airlock, but is it an airlock?
Yes, it is.
No, it's an airlock, then he'd be dead.
It's not airproof.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but like, what's the, like, this is the type of thing that if this was like a radiation thing or an airlock or something like that, like, you go to like decontaminate or something, but like, it's not like there's no air in the room, so what is
that's
it doing?
If the guards open the door and Zaheer's somehow free, he can't get out in one go. He has to get through two doors.
Yeah, but that's just like two doors, though.
That's like an elevator. If there was one door,
and Zaheer's free, he just zooms right out.
Well, that's
out.
Fine, like, okay. But it's not. It's
I don't
not
know. If, I don't know if that. Yeah, I don't think that's. I think that's just the concept of having like two doors and open one at the time. Yeah, like I don't know.
But like, listen, the point is not whether or not he can get free. It's the point, like, if he can kill somebody, and he can kill if there's air in the room. And there's air in every room.
Also, they kind of give him a fair amount of use of his hands and feet.
Yeah.
Oh, so maybe the guards can like transfer food in without having to go into the room.
Yeah, they could drop it into the.
Yeah. So
and
like,
then he just like air sucks it in to feed.
He has to work.
Yeah, something like that. So there's not an opportunity for him to bubble
That's not
anyone.
The point.
Yeah. Okay. We figured it out. Anyway.
No, we didn't.
We see bearded Zaheer.
The only solution then, Allie, is to kill Zaheer because he's deadly regardless.
I mean, I'm seriously annoyed with this. Like, that's not, like, the point for me is whether or not he can get free. It's whether or not he can kill somebody in there. He totally can.
Okay, like we well, just said, if they don't go into the room, then he can't really do
well,
that.
Well, he could have.
Yeah, Cora went into the room!
Well, Cora's an idiot! Cora's dumb.
Yeah, we've established, yes.
So,
oh, they're dumb for letting her go into the room.
Okay, you must be really...
Let it go!
You must be really... You must be really in trouble if you came all the way down here to see me.
Loki!
I came here to... Yeah, that is Loki. I came here to look you in the eye and tell you you have no power over me. I will no longer
be
able to
And then Zaheer. What a punk. Zaheer just flies at her.
And then Zaheer does the equivalent of, like, flinching at...
Like, what a jerk.
Of, like, moving at someone to get them to flinch.
It really is. That's, like, great. He's what a punk.
You're the jerk of the week.
True for flinching, Cora.
Yeah.
Got you. And he's like, you still seem scared. You can't go into the spirit world.
Well, yeah, you just flew right at me.
You can't go into the spirit world, says Zaheer. Cora's like, how'd you know? Zaheer spends most of his time in the spirit world, and it is well known that the Avatar
Zaheer
spirit
even in prison?
Hasn't
like,
been there in
chilling.
A few years. This was predicted by many, that Zaheer just could go into the spirit world.
Why wouldn't he be able to?
Like, there's no way to stop it. Yeah. He could do whatever he wants.
And Cora's like, it's not spiritually charged. Like, that's not the point!
Republic
well, except
City
it is, and the fact that she can't sense
is
it.
Is flowing with spiritual energy, and you can't even tap into it. No, my problem is you. Blaming me is a crutch to make you feel better. It's not helping you recover.
You ruined me!
I thought seeing you face to face would put an end...
You messed up my street cred!
I thought seeing you face to face would put an end to all this, but maybe it's time I realized I'll never be the same, and neither of us are the same as before. I learned to fly, but now I'm bound in chains. You have all the power in the world and the freedom to use it, but you choose to hold yourself down. Which I think is one of the potential problems with the scene.
Yes,
you choose
definitely.
To hold yourself down. Cora says, I'm not holding myself down, but my powers have limits. You're wrong. That poison should have killed you, but you were able to fight it off. You think your power has limits, but I say it's limitless, which is a key line of the scene.
I like that.
Cora says, you've created the worst dictator their kingdom has ever seen. I've heard rumors about her, but I didn't know she achieved so much power. She needs to be stopped.
How did you hear rumors in your box?
In the spirit
world. White Lotus Guard.
In the spirit world.
They don't go in there, they'll die.
In the spirit world.
But in the spirit world, you know all, you see all.
I guess not him.
Iroh told him. Iroh's like, sit down.
Quick note. I'm gonna go back to this dialogue, but before this Zaheer line,
you done goofed.
I didn't know she achieved so much power. She needs to be stopped. I love how like this characterization of Zaheer. He looks so remorseful.
I love
here.
It too. So
and
yes.
What this tells me is that unlike any of the previous villains in Avatar, this proves that Zaheer actually believes what he says and what he preaches.
And this is why Korra's better. I said it. There, I said it.
And I don't mean in Avatar. I mean in Korra.
I mean it. Avatar, Ozai was so boring and dumb.
Zhao meant what he said. So
Zhao
meant what he said. But no, this proves that Zaheer really doesn't like world leaders. Like, he's genuinely frustrated that this is... Like, he was trying to change the world in Book 2, Book 3, even though he didn't seem like it at the end. And he's, like, genuinely upset about the state of the world, and now he's going to help Korra to fix that. I love this characterization of him. I don't know if
Zaheer
this...
is my favorite villain ever in this whole franchise. Like, I know everyone loves Kuvira, but, like, Zaheer is the best.
Well, we haven't seen the end of Kuvira yet, so I don't think we can.
Well, it's not going to be as good as this.
Well, we don't know that.
How do we know that Kuvira is not going to come back
in
Book
5? We thought Zaheer's ending was terrible.
Oh, wait.
Book 5, Avatar Honora?
Book 5, Avatar Honora, yeah.
No, Avatar Jinora.
Avatar Jinora, Avatar Sami, yeah.
Well, Avatar Sami was the original.
No, that's this season, so. So, yeah, I just really love that, how it's just, like, it just proves, like, what he meant, and yeah, yes. I don't know.
I agree.
And then it also makes that part of the finale of Book 3, like, more dope.
It also, makes 313 worse for me, because in this episode, Zaheer is back to being, like, a legitimate person with legitimate views, he went crazy at the end, and he still, like, he still has his
beliefs. We don't know he went crazy in the end, though.
Well, whereas...
assumed that.
Whereas in the finale of last season, at the end, he was just spouting nonsense. It didn't seem like his views even mattered. But now we're going back to his views really mattering. I think this actually takes a very, very small number of points off of Mel's perfect episode, is what I would say.
Wait, what?
I'm not trying to challenge, but I'm just saying. I think this stuff, like, I've since moved, I've since moved 313 down from number 2 to number 4 in my rankings, and I think that's justified at this point. Anyway.
I'm still going to fight anyone who doesn't think Zaheer is the best. I'll fight you on this.
I don't think he's the best villain.
Well, I'll fight you.
Let's go.
Anyway. Let's
take it outside.
If we're both airbenders, it'll be the
fight of the century.
Let me lead you into the spirit world. If you had any other options, you wouldn't be here now, would you? We may have been enemies once, but for now, our interests are aligned.
That's also a really good line. I enjoyed that.
Floaty, meditate-y, visions.
Yeah, for some reason, he's show off when he does this.
Except what happened to you. Don't fear what might have been.
That background, I was so sure the past lives were going to come back.
Yes. Ugh, I'm not. I'm gonna be okay.
Not until the finale.
They're gonna come back. If they don't come back,
I don't want them to come back personally. So, as much as I miss them,
we know at this point we know literal nothing about the last four episodes. We're out of trailer scenes. I would say the most.
Well,
likely,
we do know something. Like they're going to.
We only know what
we
this
know
episode.
Something.
We only
we're
know,
all gonna die.
We only know what this episode has hinted at where we're going next. Right.
Yes.
I would say the most beyond episode 10, the most likely thing to happen out of every single thing you can think of is that Korra gets her past lives. I think that's number one.
I really don't want that to happen.
Anyway.
It will happen.
Spirit world. they get it. She gets in spirit world. Rava, I've missed you. Where have you been?
God, I hated this so much.
Where
would she have gone? Coffee? Like, Rava literally can't leave.
Rava shows up 15 minutes late with Starbucks.
Rava, why didn't you text me back? Did you get my text? Where did you text me back?
I've always been inside of you. That's what he said.
Like, no duh,
Spacey
Rava.
Travel.
Why? That choice of words.
Spacey Rava, travel to Jenora. You must bend the energy within. But you,
okay, Lion Turtle. But I'm you?
Also wait. She keeps. Anytime she's in the spirit world, she's literally like, I'm powerless here. Have you not realized anything? Like, it's been 3 seasons.
Why are we
literally
not appreciating that line from Delaney? Because it was both hilarious and completely true.
I didn't hear what she said.
She said, "Okay, Lion Turtle, where were you when Aang needed you? Why didn't Rava do anything in the Avatar finale? It makes no sense."
Because Aang didn't know about Rava. Because
they hadn't written her yet. That's
because Rava wasn't a thing
they
then.
They hadn't written her yet.
That's inconsistent plotting.
Like,
yeah.
She's
like from
energy
them, Jesus.
Oh,
well, okay,
Rava.
So maybe
is
they
it too much to ask her to make sense?
Maybe they just should have made Rava like a little lion turtle pet.
Yeah.
A lion
Rava like, looked on the situation was like, he's got this.
Yeah, Rava's like, the lion turtle can do it for
years
me.
Years after Avatar, what do you want from
Rava
them?
Rava is the worst. Oh my.
Rava is the worst.
Rava's
I loved her before.
We have, okay,
like
we have
it.
Fun.
This episode's terrible.
We have fundamental presences of good and evil in the universe, and one of them is terrible, and the other one is the best.
Yeah, Von,
and
the
best. Evil one is the best. Rava is the worst. Nobody cares about Rava. She's the worst.
Mel, how does it feel to be the spirit of darkness?
She's the great one, right? Like,
yeah,
that's what we're
the
saying.
Best one.
Anyway,
that's why I'm asking, and I just didn't get a response.
He's just too pleased.
No, you're most powerful here in the spirit world. You're connected to all the spiritual energy.
Again, Captain Obvious, Rava.
So it's not like just all the spiritual energy in what? No, just all the spiritual energy
in
general.
All of
just
it.
All the spiritual
all
energy.
All of
it. All
like
of
that
it.
Meme. All
like,
the spiritual energy.
Like, what does that even mean? Okay, anyway.
And nothing. That's a dumb
it means all of it. Jesus, what more do you want? She's putting out the obvious for you.
Okay, Rava is the, like, immortal kite of everything. Why can't she, like, she should have a better vocabulary and be able to express things than other than vague nonsense. Like, come on, Rava.
Rava says 3 lines in this episode. One of them is, I'm always within you. Obviously, the second
you
one.
You can't go anywhere else, Rava.
The second one is, use energy bending, which is the worst thing ever. The third one is, all the energy. All the energy.
Like, Rava sucks.
So yeah, literally everything she says is terrible. Okay.
It's so bad.
Korra, so now then the Korra theme starts playing, bends away the spear, and the spirits float away. And that's a really, really powerful scene.
The music, too. Like, he did it differently, and it was so great.
So now we're in the physical world. The pods break away. Jenora and the others get out of the spirit world. Korra saved us, says Jenora for the second time in the series.
I feel spirity.
I feel spirity, says Ryu.
I feel spirity, oh so spirity.
No.
Stop.
This is not DF the musical. Why does this happen?
Yes, it is.
Whenever Ali and Mel are on it is. Korra says, I feel whole again, I feel good. Do you think you're finally able to forget about what Zaheer did to you, says Mako in his only important line of the episode. No, but I am finally able to accept what happened, and I think that's going to make me stronger.
Why can't Janor and Korra have gone on this mission?
Right? That would have been so, that would have been 10 times better.
Yeah. Because we're setting up for Makora at the end.
This is so platonic. It's like Mako literally, it could have been anyone. Like, Mako being there was not special.
Will be discussed in...
Which is why...
Family business to take care of. That doesn't mean I'm going to stop trying to win you back, because I love you.
I did feel for Bolin. I have to marry him.
Thanks for saying all of that. You know, there is one... I actually think that Opal line read was direct. That was spot on. Thanks for saying all that. You know, there is one thing you could do to win me back. And secret like, mission...
They keep using that phrase.
If they, like...
Win me back.
Mako's lines, like, thanks for saying all that, but I just don't feel the same way about you.
Yeah, exactly.
No!
Yes.
Slight...
No.
Slight rant on the phrase... win me back, as Ali said. This is an inherently sexist phrase because it implies a woman is possession,
really,
and the man has to win the possession, right? That being said, they're kind of using it as a phrase and not as a literal meaning.
Yeah.
So it was just like a...
And Opal is manipulating Bolin.
So that's the... Like okay, that. Briefly, I want to... Before Banos leave, I want to get into the mental stuff. But, like, briefly... Is Opal purposely manipulating him? See, here's how I think most people are like, oh, Opal's manipulating him to come and help with a mission she wants. Here's and there's a lot of arguments where, oh, this is justified because, like, her mission is good and she can do this. That being said, here's how I interpreted the scene. Opal reacted very strongly to Bolin saying he loves her. She blushed, and before she was just going to run off without him and... there's going to be nothing there. But after he said that, her feelings resurfaced for him, and she wants to be able to forgive him. And her mind thinks, what can he do? Like, he's done the worst things to me. I want to forgive him, but what can he do? And then she realizes he can come help me on this mission. Then I think I would be able to forgive her. So I think how the show is presenting this, from my perspective, is that Opal is not trying to manipulate Bolin. Rather, this is an act of Opal, like, trying to care about him again, trying to want him back, trying to get herself to love him again.
Well, I think it could be a mixture of both. Like, I don't necessarily think it could be total manipulation or that, because regardless of that, he said that he'll do anything, and if she's she is taking advantage of that.
I don't think she's, like, taking advantage of it in, like, a, you know, I want to,
like,
screw him over way.
See, I don't think, that's what I'm saying. It's not that way, but that is still what she's doing, and not, like, I don't think Opal's, like, I'm never going to get back with Bolin ever, I hate him. I definitely, like, she loves him, she wants, like, she definitely wants to forgive him. I just think, I mean, it's definitely both. Like, I don't think you can say one way or the other. And it will obviously become more clear how she interacts with him next time. Like, how, because that'll...
Yeah,
clear.
I mean, that's true.
To me, the argument against any sort of manipulation is the fact that this didn't seem premeditated to me. This seemed to be a spur-of-the-moment thought from her.
Well, that's also, like, a spur of... It would also be a spur-of-the-moment manipulation. We're about to leave, and Bolin's like, I'll do anything for you.
Yeah, no, I mean...
That's pretty quick.
Yeah, so I just think the primary motivation is what I said.
So I can forgive him again. Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't know. Anyone agree with me? Other than Ellie?
I just think it's both. Like, you know, I just need to see next week's episode before I can, you know, confirm. It'll be based on her interaction. I mean, that was a very short, it was a very rushed interaction.
I don't think there's any, like, malice of bad intent on her part. It's just... This is what she thinks will... redeem himself, giving him a chance to redeem himself.
Yeah, that's how I think. I also think you can, like, as Iki did in The Calling, you can manipulate people without intending to or without having any malintent behind it.
Yeah.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just because they're using that phrase, because he's like, I'll do anything.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so this is...
Anything?
Opal reacting how she did to Bolin, blushing like that, is the only thing that's really caused me to want to ship Opal again. Like,
that's it.
Well, because I'm hashtag team Opal. So if she's mad at him, I'm mad at him. But now, like, she's blushing, and it's great.
Wow.
And,
but he said the L word.
I want to see how Lynn deals with them on the bison.
Lesbians.
Yeah.
Thank you, Scott Pilgrim.
No, Cora and Asami weren't in that scene. What
yeah,
are you talking
about? That was
well, there
was
you are. You're alive.
Anyway, okay.
Yeah, no, I'm back.
Okay, so let's talk the Cora's recovery aspect of this episode. So here's the two. So I have posts, extensive posts from Sam and Toongal that I'm going to read eventually, but I want to talk in general while we still have Ben here first about this, and then we can maybe get into the specific arguments. But basically, the arguments are this. So the big question is, this episode serves as, at the very least, a pseudo-conclusion to Korra's mental recovery arc that has been going on the entire season. This is the most important plot of the entire season, and the one that we've been focusing on for a very long time. And this is an episode trying to wrap it up in one episode, one act of one episode. How could it not be rushed? How could it not handle this, like, not optimally? That was like three knots in a sentence. But
yeah,
like,
I don't can you say that again?
Like, how could it possibly handle this optimally in one act of one episode, right? That's the thing. So that's kind of this is kind of what Sam is eventually going to say when I'll read her essay, is that this is too soon, and this is not enough impetus for her to have fully recovered.
You use the word impetus a lot.
I guess. I don't know.
Well, we don't know that she's fully recovered. She'll
still out
totally
time.
Have
yeah,
some.
I right. will.
Okay, so that's one of my counterpoints to Sam. We'll read your essay would be that, is she fully recovered? It's hard
we
to tell,
know.
Though, now. But yeah, basically, this isn't... Is this even enough? All Zaheer did, the main thing that Zaheer did was show her that she has to accept what happened in the past. The main question to me, regardless of anything else, is this enough for Cora to be the thing that makes Cora truly overcome her PTSD? Is it that, yeah, it just plays out the scene in her head and accepts it for something that's happened? And the problem is that I can't really answer that question because I don't have experience with this.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
I could tell you in general with mental illness that wrapping this up this quickly is not something that appeals to me, and this is kind of what Sam talks about too. It doesn't just go away like this. You can't just solve it in one act of one episode, but it's different with PTSD. It's not going to be the same. I don't have it. I can't really speak to it. So I don't really know. That's kind of one of the things here. The other thing is that Toongal brings up is basically that she doesn't like that Zaheer is saying that she can, like, let me bring her post up, but she's saying that, like, Zaheer can't, she's saying that it's like a choice, right? The subject of choice, I'm quoting Toongal's post on Tumblr. The subject of choice reared its ugly head regarding Cora's mental state, although for some reason it didn't bother me as much as it did earlier in the series. Maybe I've come to expect it, maybe circumstances surrounding the dialogue weren't as personal to me as it was in 403. Regardless, it was just annoying. Since when do you choose to be traumatized? The concept is just ridiculous. Is Cora holding herself back? I think that's a legitimate thing to say, but she is not holding herself back because she's choosing to do so. It is an unconscious defense mechanism that she has very little control over. That said, perhaps another reason this didn't bother me as much was because it was used in the same sentence as a compliment. Zaheer said that Cora has all the power in the world, and later backs that up with the fact that she lasted so long under the poison. Cora has a lot of willpower, and she needs to acknowledge her inner strength. And perhaps another mitigating factor for me here is that Cora did contest this point with Zaheer, but Zaheer pointed out that it was her own perception that she has limits that is keeping her from reaching her true potential. I don't think this is a bad thing to say, however, no actual person with mental illness / trauma is an all-powerful avatar, so yeah, still anyone can benefit from a little more belief in themselves, says the person who constantly doubts stuff. And then she have one other thing is that Zaheer saying that blaming him is just a crutch to make her feel better. Who else does she have to blame? Who tried to kill her again? Who put her in this state of mind to begin with? So I don't like think it's a bad thing for the episode that Zaheer is not like that everything Zaheer is saying isn't great, right? He's kind of a bad person. So if two things he says aren't the best thing to say to someone like this, then I think that's fine, right?
Well, Zaheer's character's always been very matter of fact. He's always this is just Zaheer, this is who he is, this is how he talks.
I also don't this also isn't the thing that ends up like being the thing that's like helping Cora truly. Like,
yeah.
To me the entire thing is that Zaheer makes Cora relive the experience. And that's what the show is saying is truly helping her overcome this.
Not like, I mean, maybe it will help her a little bit, but I don't think it will help her like completely.
Yeah.
I think that it's making her, I think that it's helping her a little bit is good.
I think this is the first step. To me, that's what this shows. Like, first she has to accept what happened, because she hadn't accepted what happened. She kept playing over the what-ifs, like Zahir was saying. So, for me, as a first step, that works for me.
Same.
And maybe by the end of the season, it isn't resolved. That, yes, they win the day, but Korra is still fighting this war with herself. And I'd be okay with that.
Because
that's real life. That's what that is. And if this is the conclusion, no, this is not okay. But as a first step, which I'm going to take it as that right now, because I can't, like, and I'm hoping we'll see more.
Then if we had it end that way, too, we could have it end like Katniss and Peeta with the nightmares with Korra and Asami.
Real, not real.
Wow, that was rude, Mel. That was one of my favorite parts of the entire series. Like, okay, anyway.
What?
Real, not real. Okay.
And I like them. It's just sometimes you gotta...
And also, in four episodes, how many episodes do we have left?
Four episodes.
We have four episodes left. Let's say, like, if Korra isn't recovered, what on earth are they going to do? Like, yes, we have a lot of ground to cover, but I can't see, so...
I mean, that's not, I understand, like, okay, from a perspective where she needs to get better to fight the final fight. I don't think that's, like, a good...
From a, like, storytelling
standpoint. I understand, but that's not super relevant here. Ben, do you have any thoughts on this before I read Sam's essay, which might take a while?
I'll try to keep this short, but I bring this from a different perspective because I have autism. And even now, 26 years later, you know, being married, all that stuff, it's something I have to fight every day in some way. So, no, I don't think you ever can fully recover. Well... It's an ongoing process. Now, Korra, in this case, is more of a PTSD type thing. I think we saw the first steps in episode 2 of her recovering from this. And now we've come to this point where I don't feel like it's the end, but she's taken a greater step forward. So I'm hoping this isn't the end, but... I don't know.
Would you be okay with, like, this portrayal if this is the major, wrapping up the plotline? Maybe we see it, like, very minorly in the last four episodes, but if this is, like, mostly the end of it?
Well, because I don't... Well, in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. Obviously, this isn't something you can rush, you know, because this is not an issue that just... Whatever mental issue you want to talk about... It's not something that can be resolved overnight. You know, it takes time. Yeah. But at the same time, I feel they have taken time, even before this episode. You know, think back to Korra alone, where she was learning to walk again. Sometimes it's those little steps that lead you to the greater step, which I think we had in this episode.
They've certainly shown their aspects of the recovery, and I think one evidence of this not just being a quick wrap-up is that it could have been a quick wrap-up in Episode 6, Battle of Zafu, but she regressed again there, right? So we've kind of seen, not necessarily regress, like Dark Avatar Korra came back, so we've kind of seen it not just wrap up neatly in the past, so maybe it's fine to achieve this like big step here, because maybe we've earned it this season.
And I think as far as like the choice talk, I mean, I don't think it's a matter of her choosing not to, like, I don't know how to put this, but I don't think the choice was about she was choosing to put herself down. I think the choice was, it was her choice to face it head on. So I'm not.
Yeah, it's hard to get into specifics like that when Zahir just talks super vaguely and like, I don't know.
I think the choice was more, she chose to face this head on here and now.
Yeah, that's interesting. I can buy that. I don't know. To me, the bigger problem is not necessarily the choice thing, because, like, as Toonkel said in her post, it's not as offensive here as it was when Toph said it, because, one, Zahir, we know Zahir's evil. Two, it was more of, like, an impact, like, Toph is, like, this recovery figure for Korra, and Zahir kind of is, too, and Sam talks about therapist Zahir in her post, and it's like, that's kind of what's going on, but at the same time, this is different, this is more of a spiritual thing, too. Now, that's the other thing let's get into briefly, is that we're starting to tie Korra's spiritual recovery to her mental, Korra's spiritual progression to her mental recovery, and in the last few interviews, Mike and Brian have basically been saying, if you want to look for one thing for the entire show, it's that this is Cora's spiritual arc. She's like completely non-spiritual person in the beginning, and now this is her developing it throughout the entire series, a spiritual connection. Side note leads me to believe that we're going to get a spiritual conflict at the end. But here we're tying her spiritual progression to her overcoming her PTSD and her mental state in general. And I think it's a legitimate question to ask whether this is fair game, whether this in some way delegitimizes her mental state, saying that it's just her spiritual progression.
I don't think so, because I think that, for speaking again personally, I think spirituality and mentally, it's all a part of you.
Yeah.
So if you grow in one, you can grow in the other.
And her well-being as the Avatar. We talked about this is very important as an Avatar too. And she's obviously the physical part she has down pat, but the spiritual part, for her to be a fully realized and healthy Avatar, I mean, this makes sense that they've tied these two together. And I don't think it delegitimizes it, because as the Avatar, this would be very important.
In terms of personally relating to it, I think it's hard in this case to do so, because spirituality in the Avatar world doesn't mean the same thing as in our world. Like, it kind of does, but at the same time, it means like a literal connection to a literal physical place, right?
Yeah.
And
manifests so clearly in the Avatar world.
Yeah, we don't have no clear way of relating to that. So I just haven't really seen criticisms of that, but I think it's worth questioning. I actually personally really liked tying these two things together. I think it worked here. It happens really fast, but I don't know. I bought it. I think they two just like happen to coincide. It's like, of course, this spiritual block is a result of her mental block, and by getting around the block, she's progressing as well, and that can lead to further progressions.
And her hallucination is her what we would consider her spiritual self, her in the Avatar state.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's her the manifestation of her PTSD is a spiritual element. Yeah, so those two kind of tie together. I wonder how much you could get into that, like in terms of why is this hallucination manifesting itself in terms of a spiritual form. It's interesting to see how that all ties together.
There is real-world accounts of things like that.
Yeah, but like of Cora seeing herself in the Avatar state, you know. Like,
well, I mean, and I always bring it back to Demon Camp because it's so similar, just the form of PTSD where you literally see some sort of spiritual, in this case, in the case of that book, dark, you know, scary entity, but you literally see this thing in a, which the way they present it in the book is that it's presented in basically Caleb, the soldier who's seeing it, sees it in an entirely spiritual way. Like, he's manifesting his PTSD, or it's manifesting itself rather in a very spiritual way for him. And I suppose a few others like him that are mentioned in the book. So it does have a real world precedent.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I don't really have criticism from that angle, and I think it's potentially well done. Let's read it at the very least part of Sam's essay here.
I didn't hear anything you just said.
Can you hear me now? Yes, you can hear me. Okay. Let's read Sam's essay. I'm going to replace a word she repeats a lot with jerk. Sam's essay is called, "I'm kind of a jerk and I don't want to see Cora feel better." And I don't think I'm going to read the whole thing, but let's... So basically Sam says, I don't like the resolution that we came to and coming to it right now. I don't like how fast it was. Why don't I like this? I was very on board during Cora Alone. Why was I on board? I could relate. I could relate to what Cora was going through, and for me that made that episode near perfect. This, well, obviously I can't relate to pod people saving. I can't fully relate to the PTSD Cora is exhibiting, nor the treatment of it, because that's not what I struggle with. What I can relate to is the aspect of getting better, seeing therapists, and being put on medication in the hopes that these things will help me function better. It's a process that takes years, takes a lifetime, no matter what it is you're struggling with, and you're never out of the woods. Sometimes you find a clearing, but that will take a few more steps, and you're right back to 100-foot-tall wall to wall trees. And with that, this episode flopped. One visit to Dr. Zaheer, PhD, and poof, all better, the block is gone. This is the quick fix I was afraid of, though manifesting in another way, or at least that's what I fear. I fear this has been a quick fix and we're not going to see any more Zaheer flashbacks, but I don't truly know. I'm not a writer on the show. These things cannot be solved in one fear-facing, one impromptu therapy session. This is what I feared we were going to do with the Toph thing. If Cora still struggles, then what I'm saying will be null and it'll be fine, probably. If she doesn't, there's no reason to be angry. I know they don't have all the time in the world to focus on these things, and it's better for the finale that she's as close to 100% as possible, but it's disappointing. I would have liked to see this play into the finale, Cora's flashback struggle, and maybe find a resolution from there. I hope it will, but this quick fix method, I feel from this episode, is not helping me hope too much. And where we're at with the Spirit Vine weapons trying to rescue Sue, all this, it doesn't give me hope that we'll ever come back to it again. There's so much stuff going on. How can they fit in Cora's stuff too? So I guess this essay from Sam in general is kind of in response to me trying to defend the recovery in the show, like how it wasn't necessarily too fast. Maybe it was fine. I like how they related to the spiritual angle. And Sam just naturally didn't like it. So one of the conclusions she came to is that she can't relate to it, and this makes her a jerk, like that she doesn't want to see Cora feel better. But I don't think that's true. I think that's a legitimate angle to take, that like, this should, as Sam kind of and Ben even kind of talked about, is that this should take, like, this is like a lifetime process thing. It doesn't just go away like this. And it does, I think it does seem like this episode is the conclusion to the arc. That being said, we haven't seen the last four episodes, and we don't know. We're not going to see Zaheer flashbacks again. This episode is definitively ending Zaheer flashbacks, right?
Yes.
That being said, we didn't...
Well, we don't know.
In terms of when you do stuff like this, in terms of telling stories, and I don't know when my computer's going to cut out, is that the defining moment for stuff like this is always the apotheosis, where a character is supposed to confront the thing that holds the most power in their life. And in this mini world of what's happening to Cora in this scene, because this is sort of... Or in this season, because it's sort of like a miniature arc in the span of her entire arc, is she has to confront the thing that currently in the past six episodes or however many we've had has been holding the most power in her life, and that's been Zaheer. She's come face to face with Zaheer, and now it's done.
Yeah, so...
But that still leaves... She could still hallucinate herself.
Right,
don't know
so
that
that's my next point, right?
That's what I was thinking.
Miss Dark Avatar Korra could still manifest, especially in the finale. Yes. This wasn't necessarily concluding that, and it's almost like... It's interesting that Korra kind of sees this as such a positive, and it's like, oh, I feel whole again, I feel fixed, but... There's two main things that were plaguing here in the past. It was the Zaheer flashbacks, and it was a hallucination of herself, and we've only solved one of those two here. So it's I'm
of the opinion that those two things are connected.
I think they're definitely connected. I would be disappointed because this episode didn't really touch on Ms. Dark Avatar.
No, and I agree. It would be a very disappointing ending, but I would not be surprised in the slightest. And in fact, I'm expecting Ms. Dark Avatar Korra to not come back.
Yeah, so that being said...
I'm banking on her returning in the finale.
Me too.
I think that's a potential finale plot point. I do see this as such a conclusion to the mental recovery arc that I'm kind of going in expecting us not to get much, if anything. And I'm kind of okay with it, like...
Here's
the reason that I'm okay with it is because I don't see how it relates at all to Kuvira, and that's why I don't need it coming back. It's exactly like was said in not Korra alone, but whatever that episode was with Toph, or Toph's like, that fight is over. Yeah. That's remnants of what happened last season. This has no relevance in terms of Kuvira, so that's why I don't see it coming back.
So I think it does.
Her losing control in the Avatar state totally has relevance.
I think
that's the thing is that could happen and doing that with anyone. Yeah. Kuvira wasn't the point.
From the angle of Kuvira is an analog of herself, and she's like someone who's similar ideology and like just personhood or whatever to her. You could see that relating in that angle. I don't know if I'm not convinced that relating to Kuvira is the thing that's going to ultimately matter this season. But we'll get to that more later. Okay.
I hope it is, because we haven't really seen much.
Well, it was only mentioned once is the problem. They didn't really... They touched upon it, and then they're like, oh, that's nifty, and then moved on.
But they've talked about it multiple times in interviews and stuff, so I'd be...
They have, but I think it's just something they're impressed with themselves that they made this character. Like, oh, it's kind of like Korra.
Didn't we do such a great job, you guys?
I don't think it's come up enough for it to... Because the thing, the problem, and this is part of the problem, I guess, too, is that, I guess what I think it was Toongal who said it, is that Korra's obsessed with this being Zaheer's fault and facing Zaheer, that it's not, she's not focused on herself, is the thing. If this was sort of, if they had done this better, they would have focused on Miss Dark Avatar Korra, and that this was something that, it was Korra looking in the mirror the entire time, and that's the problem.
Well, maybe that will be what's happening in the finale.
The roadblock she needs to overcome, and that's entirely possible. However, they made it so much about her fight with Zaheer and giving us this physical Zaheer is the problem, and then putting her face to face with him, which I didn't expect them to do, that I feel like it is over. It shouldn't be, but I feel like it is.
Okay, for a matter of time, let's move on from this, and then we'll come back in a minute.
Well, since I'm about to go, can I just make two things?
Yeah, and then I want to get your grade on it. That's what I was going to move on
to. Okay. Okay. Well, as far as like what Sam was talking about, Korra's choice in this episode, I can relate to that personally because about 14 years ago, I had to make a choice for myself as well regarding my condition or however you want to put it. So I can relate to that as far as the importance of that choice. And then, you know, if this is the closure of this issue, while I would be a little disappointed, I am happy that they at least took time throughout this season to focus on it. So
yeah, I think it's still a net positive. I think it wasn't clear whether it'd be a positive portrayal of mental illness in media, but I think they've achieved a positive portrayal, even if this is the conclusion.
Yeah, and yes, we may wish that they spend a little more time on it because that would be more realistic. The fact of the matter is, this is an animated show, and I think sometimes maybe we expect too much from it. Well, I mean, should we really expect them to you know, keep that as the focus for this remainder of the series when there's a lot of story to get to?
I think we expect so much because they dished out so much. I mean, no one expected that storyline, and when they did that, we were like, this is awesome, and then we had a high expectation because they set up such a delicate and very interesting and very mature storyline. So
yeah, I think they did. I think they're in an obligation too.
It's kind of a feedback loop a little bit.
But I do think they've satisfied... For me, I'm satisfied with how much focus they put onto it, even if I wish it was a little more.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Okay. Before the clip and Ben leaving, let's start rating.
Oh, wait, is the clip out?
Yeah, not yet. Let's start rating the episode. 5 is an average episode of television. 10 is the best episode of television you've ever seen. Ben, what would you give this out of 10?
Well, first, go ahead and didn't Sam and Toongal have ratings or something?
We'll get to that later.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, this is definitely one of the strongest episodes of Book 4. It's probably in my top 5 of Korra, for now. I think it's a very solid 9.5.
Wow.
Nice. Interesting to see the type of ratings we're going to get here. Okay, we're now going to probably... Well, okay, let's keep going. I'm going to search for this clip while we keep getting into high ratings. Do you have to head out now, Ben?
I like to hear everybody's really quick, I'll stick around for a second.
I'm going to pause the podcast at some point, but for now, let's keep going, and let's get Mel's rating out of 10 on this episode.
Okay. I feel like a jerk because this is my problem. Is that I felt like the vines thing was, unless it comes back, which it might, but it felt like just such an inciting incident that lasted 2 acts. Like the entire point of this episode was to get Korra in front of Zaheer, and that was great. Like once that happened, I thought that was awesome. But I'm mad that it took 2 acts to get there. It's analogous to the stakeout. I'm going to call it the standoff. That wasn't it. The one from last season where she went to go meet Zaheer. I don't think it was nearly as good as that episode. I thought that Act 3 was amazing. So I'm going to give it... Basically, this is what... it was 7.6.
Oh, wow.
This is what I've been giving everything. I haven't been moving because
You didn't think this was significantly better than...
No, and it could have been if they had... If they had focused more on Zaheer or brought that in earlier or handled or even okay, so say they want to do the Spirit Vine thing, then handle it better and make it work a little bit better than the introduction at the beginning, and then, oh, well, I'll go talk to Zaheer now because that's what I have to do. And especially that stuff with Janor. I mean, the entire point was that she had to get into the spirit world and what, free everyone? Like, it was just... I did not like all the ways that they were trying to link things that they needed to happen together, because they were... It was a cleanup episode, in my opinion.
Hopefully,
which I know that's an unpopular opinion, but I'm gonna... It's my opinion.
Hopefully they at least explain why the vines did what they did.
That's what I'm thinking.
If they did that, then maybe that would help the view of this episode. I don't know.
Please.
Yeah, I think we're going to come back to the vines for sure. You know,
I just have I've had a fairly low opinion of all the episodes this season, minus Cora alone, I think.
Hey, it's your opinion, and it's a valid opinion, so.
Thank you, Ben.
That's true.
Hey, everybody's entitled to
your
it.
Your opinion sucks, Mel. Is that what you want to hear?
Yeah, is that what you want?
Hey.
Did you get me those chopsticks?
I did. So
thank you.
okay. Allie, what would you rate this episode out of 10?
Well, I mean, I do agree with both sides, and Mel, I joked. I do respect, I agree with your opinion.
No, you weren't joking. It's fine.
Okay, I wasn't joking. But no, I do agree.
I know you better than
I do
that.
Agree that, like, I mean, the first two acts were pretty boring, and I mean, even though, like, I was interested in them, and I'm pretty sure they're still going to use the vines, like what Mel was saying, it was just a plot to get her to Zaheer, and it was annoying that they did it that way, but Act 3 really just made this episode really, really great, and I know we talked about, like, the mental illness thing, and, like, while I won't be, like, as happy as, like, if they made it, like, more, like, real life, like, she'll never be over it, I will be, like, satisfied-ish, and just the whole act was pretty great other than that, so I'm gonna stick with the rating I gave it on my channel and give it an 8.5. But it's right above, or no, it's right below Cora alone for me.
Cool. Delaney.
I really enjoyed the episode, and I agree with what everyone said, though I actually enjoyed Acts 1 and 2 more than most. And Lynn's always a good thing. I'm not 100% satisfied with the handling of Cora's mental state. And I was pleasantly surprised by how they handled Zaheer. I was not expecting it to go well. I was like, no, don't go see Zaheer, this is gonna be stupid.
Same.
But I was surprised and pleasantly surprised.
Well, I wasn't thinking it was gonna be stupid, I thought she was just gonna die.
I just thought she was gonna die. I guess I hate grading. For me, I think I'm gonna have to go with an 8.5. I think I was thinking a 9 for a while, but no, this isn't now. Doesn't
too much.
Don't even 8.5. I think like I enjoy it, like I really
I was gonna give it a 9 too.
And like Dylan, every time I watched it, I enjoyed every part of it.
I'm gonna 8.5 on this.
Well, it's fine. Doesn't mean you're wrong. I mean,
your opinion is wrong. Okay,
Jeff,
Allie, what did you give it? I wasn't paying attention when you were talking.
Jeff, you're up.
8.5.
Yeah. Okay. I'd say 8.8 because I love the Zaheer angle and how that all worked out. On reflection, doesn't seem like a huge amount of rewatchability. So, yeah.
Hmm.
Anyways. I know I'm being super inconsistent because I don't always talk about that, but whatever. There you go.
No, I win the award for most inconsistent grading, so it's
okay.
All
right,
just you can say I'm consistent.
Okay, I'm going to talk about this as I post the clip, which does...
is it up?
There's no title given with the clip, for the record.
Oh, really? Are you serious? That's so dumb.
Or there might be. It's just the dumbest title ever.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Oh, you see it too, Jeff. Yeah.
I'm going to watch this.
The clip is called 3 Beifong Generations, but I'm sure that's not what the episode is called.
Can that please be the name of the episode, please?
No!
I'd totally be okay with that. That's the name of the episode, yes.
Anyway, so I'm on a different plane than you guys with this one. So I think this episode, and I'm sorry if I'm still in the posting process here, so I'm sorry if my thoughts are scattered.
I was like, where is it? It's not up yet.
It's going to have to process too, so I can finish my thoughts. So,
I'll post a link to it.
No, thank you. Okay, yeah, that's fine. I think this is a phenomenal top 10 episode of the series. I think it's the best episode since Cora of the Lone. I think of episodes in terms of my tiered rankings. I know that surprises all of you, but so
really,
I actually think this is pretty close to a best ever tier episode, which is literally the best episode of episodes of television I've ever seen. I don't think it quite falls in there because I don't think it has something to like differentiate it, you know, than that like there's not something that transcends for me. Okay, I'm posting a clip so now I can focus. I haven't seen it yet either, for the record. There's not something that transcends. That transcends in the episode. But that being said, I think every single part of this is great and has a phenomenal third act. I love the third act. I'll buy the recovery. Like, I think everything that happens is so good. I love Opal's monologue. I think it's one of the best scenes of the series. I just think it's so good. I love Janora in here. The minor quibble about Janora, getting captured again. Other than that, I think it's a near perfect episode. I'm at a 9.6 or 9.7. It's incredible. Wow. Better than episode one, which I gave a 9.5. Not as good as Coraline, which is a 9.9. And I loved it. I'm very excited for where the season is going.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't think you guys are on the right. I don't know.
That was very...
Wow! You know what, Dylan, don't start this conversation because...
Wow.
Well, I do think I think this is the. I mean, I agree that this is the best episode since Coral Alone.
Like, yeah, I think it's just absolutely phenomenal.
I would not say that.
It is a very good episode.
I don't. People are clearly watching something.
Oops, I said. I said episode 9. It's episode 10, right? Yeah.
No, it's episode 9.
No, this is episode
The one for the clip.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, it's 10.
He done goofed.
I done goofed.
Okay,
and we're back. So what just happened while we're gone is that the clip came out and we posted and we all watched and now we're freaking out about the clip.
I'm a ghost right now. I'm not actually a person.
Pause the podcast and go watch the clip if you haven't seen it.
No one can hear Ali's scream.
You can watch it on dombufang.com.
Yeah, because you guys...
Okay, anyway, we have to get back to this actual episode, then we can discuss
edit.
Oh. God damn it, guys. Come on.
It's not a swear.
That's a swear.
No, it's not. It's a place.
It's a tier one.
Oh my god, shut up.
Okay, anyway.
Shut up.
This is already going to be tough enough with two computers. Okay, that's actually good. Okay, so back to this episode. So
I'm so going to be tired tomorrow morning. Okay.
You should sleep.
Go sleep.
Anyway, I just absolutely love this one. I don't really understand the tepidness, but it can be debated later. Anyway. One other thing I thought of note was Toongal saying that something else that I thought was interesting that I touched upon in the last book is they keep focusing on Korra's need for something concrete and physical. She needed to see the vines and use them to see what was actually happening rather than just sensing a vague disturbance. The way she has been treating her mental state is similar. At first with him, but to deal with the real problem of going to the spirit world and the need to physically see him in chains and to realize that he is no longer a real threat. But I think it speaks to her character and spiritual difficulties, and it has been surprisingly consistent. So that's an interesting analysis of Korra's character, that she needs to, like, she has trouble with, like, abstract things and kind of needs, like, a tangible, physical, resolution for her stuff. That's, like, how it kind of worked with Zaheer. And it's kind of how...
I'd like to point out that I said that back when we found out there was metal in her body.
Yeah, I think you did say something similar to that. It's, yeah, good job, Mel.
Thank you.
You get credit. Okay, but anyway.
Never mind.
Credit given. Okay, but I think that's an interesting characterization. Sam has some other thoughts. Let's get to those. What is that noise? Oh, okay. I'll stop with that noise. I don't understand what's happening. But Sam gave it like a 5 out of 10, I think. And she thought it was an average episode.
See, Sam gets it.
No, that's too harsh.
Well, the only reason I didn't give it lower is because the scene in the third act.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so, well, see, I think the episode is just so consistent in the first two acts. I don't understand, like... I understand.
I just feel like there's just such a break between the first two acts and the third act. I feel like they didn't connect at all.
It's different, but like I don't think it matters that much. So we have two separate things. This is not an episode that like is self-contained like The Stakeout, right? Well, it's like it's one that is going to relate plots back into further episodes of the season. We're establishing the Spirit Vines thing, and we're also finishing up a plot from previously, but I think it connects well. I don't know.
People see things differently, so, you know.
Sorry for not getting...
Some people with 4 years of running training on...
Oh, I'm not going to be able to play that voicemail. Tato sends a voicemail. Unfortunately, my computer... Yeah, I'm not on the computer I had it up on, so I apologize. I don't...
Oh, dang. Can't you, like, just put this on the end of the podcast when you get your computer?
That would be tomorrow, though. I'm going to upload this right away. Someone emailed us and says, my thoughts on Opal in the finale. Due to the way she's been acting, I think there's a strong possibility that she will do things against the airbending oath in the finale. Side note, I forgot we had this email. But yeah, this is a good... I should have read this earlier. She's already gone behind Tenzin and Jinora's back by being aggressive, which is not the airbender way. I think this could lead to a chain of events, for example, suffocating someone akin to Katara's bloodbending during the Southern Raiders. If you think about it, Opal has a bad taste in her mouth for the way current airbenders do things, and if you think about... It, she did grow up in almost the exact opposite lifestyle prior to joining them. I think it'd be interesting to see how having people like Opal joining the Air Nation so late in life when they have their own morals at this point and its consequences. Jedi comparison here, but it's the same reason the Jedi don't train kids past a certain age, too easy to influence to the dark side.
Oh yes. My goodness, Opal's Darth Vader.
Basically. Yes,
she's the chosen one.
Kavira's Darth Vader. So
you were the chosen one.
No, Kavira's like Nuke Gunray. She's she's blockading everything like a jerk bag.
She's the Inquisitor from Star Wars Rebels. That's a good one.
Let's get into some Greg Serafin's Round of the Podcast. Greg's thoughts. Ryu, it makes sense that he would be giving tours because you know he's known for his winning personality and positive attitude. But seriously, he's not personable. Although he's not personable, forcing him to do that is probably good training to make him a more balanced person, which is something the airbenders would try and do. Fire Lord Azumi. Whoa, dang, girl. Don't be such a chatterbox. Other people need a chance to speak. So this
hashtag
is
a nonsense war.
Sarcastic. Yeah, it's Korra's spiritual nature. I actually think it makes perfect sense that Korra, by meditating or just being in a place, can't get spiritual reading like Jinora can. Korra's biggest problem is, which is outlined by Zaheer later on, is that what she perceives as the limits of her power become the limits of her power. We all know that I had a hard time initially connecting to the spiritual side of herself, so she had it under her. So it's not as highly developed as it would be for most of the other avatars. However, Korra does not believe that she's able to get a quote in spiritual reading unquote by touching vines. She perceives this as part of her powers that she still has access to, even though she definitely still has the ability to access the full gamut of abilities that we've seen from other spiritual beings that are avatars in the past. The biggest takeaway I had was that Korra typoed to Cord. That was an interesting. I've seen Korea many times. Yeah,
that is a new one.
When Korra was trying to convince Tenzin to let her go see Zaheer, were rare awkward line reads on Janet's part. However, some amazing line reads. Opal starts talking to Colin.
Wrong.
Rava, it's okay.
Air raid drill.
Greg says it's okay. Okay, hold the phone. Rava can suddenly talk to Korra in the spirit world, and that's a normal thing. The whole thing about Rava is that for like the past 1,000 years, she didn't talk to any of the avatars, which is why the lore of how the avatar came to be was seemingly lost to living memory, even without the avatar knowing its origin story. Now Rava,
because Rava's always there. LOL. Okay.
Now Rava's
always inside.
Now Rava's always chatting inside with Korra like it's no big deal, and Korra's talking.
They're
back to
besties.
Her. I thought their consciousness and their spirits were joining combined, and it wasn't as if they're two separate entities. It seems like they're two separate entities with their full source of their connection, and again, it's confusing and unclear. I have written to Bagus Corbett, so it's unclear how they're connected to the source of connection. It looks like Nick Soan. If Rava could have helped find people or spoken with past avatars in any way, she has remained silent up until now. Why didn't Rava help Aang when he was looking for Ko?
Yeah.
The more the show is anything about Rava, the more confusing and unclear the Avatar Rava relationship becomes. For instance, now the avatars can go to the avatar state in the spirit world without taking their physical bodies. Someone tell me I'm just confused and it'll actually make sense and I'll feel a little better. This whole situation makes me feel all spirity and rant. Okay. How do you respond to Greg, Mel?
I respond with that.
So here's my response. So here's the thing. Apart, you know, taking out the whole retconning thing, because in the context of the story, that obviously doesn't work. The only two avatars we've seen her interact with are Wan and Korra, and Juan and Korra have something in common that the other avatars don't. So I feel like this chatty talk with Rava, chatty talk.
Hashtag chatty talk.
This, you know, just Rava getting chatty with Korra. A, you know, you've got new spiritual age. There's no more past lives, that sort of thing. I don't know how that would go with it, but, you know, that did happen. Fact of the matter is that both Juan and Korra fought Vatu and had to fight Vatu. You know, and the point is that you fight Vatu along. Vatu is the opposite of Rava. So I feel like, you know, she doesn't, if she interferes and steps in every single time the Avatar has a problem, then that's not going to work, which is why she didn't step in when Aang had this, or Kyoshi was murdering people, or, you know, the other Avatars were doing what they do, because they're doing their job. They're doing what the Avatar does, and if they don't succeed, then that sucks, but that's the way that goes. Rava, I think, stepped in because she was forced to. She was brought out on this fight with Vatu, and it was a whole deal. So I think chatty Rava is the result of that.
Hashtag chatty Rava.
Chatty Rava.
They bond over their hatred of Vatu. Hooray. Okay.
Someone prove me wrong.
And Greg says Toph. I'm disappointed that Toph did not show up in this episode. And it
does
not. And it does not appear that as though she will reappear. At least.
No.
At least not in the swamp.
You mentioned that because
if Toph was going to reappear in the swamp at this point, we would have seen her lead a troop of waterbenders against Kuvira. However, I do think it is possible. Wait. Look what he says. However, I do think it is possible that we will see Lin and Opal run into Toph, also trying to rescue Sue and the family.
Good job.
You completely turned it around.
Greg literally called it. Okay, good job.
That was a wild ride from the
start. Greg didn't call, though, the chatty Rava. No. I have an explanation. So there you go, Greg.
I don't know.
You get
one.
You get one.
This is a wild ride.
Everybody gets one.
Well, since Ben's door, let's talk about Makora. I have a post from Mirror to read.
Mirror
just posted this to her Tumblr, but she also gave me it for the podcast. So I'm going to have permission to counter what she's saying.
Did you have permission, or
she sent me the post as her thoughts? I'm taking this as permission.
Did you? Okay, see, that's it.
Okay, so this
will be my, this will be the last subject I want to talk about, because my mind's been blown after that long statement.
Gifts is fast.
Okay, let's read.
I know.
Let's read the Makora perspective in this episode. Mare says, "I really loved the dynamic that Mako and Korra shared in this episode. It did a really excellent job of reiterating why I love their relationship so much. Since book one, I believe that Mako and Korra have always found a way to balance one another out. I can point out many times that Mako has always had to bring Korra back down to earth, or rather keep her from making an abrupt decision. But this time, it's Korra who balances Mako out, and she's not even realizing it. When he begins to make a hasty decision by using a fire dagger to try to free everyone, Korra says no. She puts her hand on his chest, a highly romantic gesture, and gently tells him that he'd provoke the vines, and guess what? He listens to her. He doesn't argue with her. He lets her lead the way. I simply love that, and I'm so glad that they included that scene into this episode. It shows how much they've both grown as people, but it also shows that they still have an effect on one another like they did when there were for sure romantic undertones in their actions. This is a long post. How much do I want to read? Mare says, I'm sick of people acting like there's some great big build up has to occur between them to get them back together, when that's simply not the case. There's already been so much build up between them. Don't you see? I feel like people are choosing to look at book four as its own season rather than its whole story. Yes, seasons are meant to be separate arcs, but as we saw with this episode, the narrative, the development within characters constantly grows the narrative. Much as I speculated on, Mako was Korra's rock in this episode. He watched over her while she meditated, and when she saw Zahira, Mako was there to hold her. He held her while she told him what's been going on.
Ben started laughing before I even
Oh my god. He's the only one she's told that to. He simply says that he's there for her and asks what she needs. He asks her if she's sure about seeing Zahira, and when she says yes, he agrees. He trusts her, and when she tells Mako that she needs to face Zahira alone, he doesn't argue. You can tell he's worried, but he doesn't let her know that, because he wants her to know that he trusts her and believes in her, and because he knows that's so desperately what she wants from everyone. I am seeing many people arguing about the interactions between Mako and Korra were nothing more than platonic, and while I would disagree, I don't want to take away from opinions of anyone else. For me, though, personally, it's not hard for me to take several of these actions as romantic ones, especially come off of a season where it had awkward, where it was awkward to hug one another, an episode in which Mako talks about how much Korra means to him. These touches definitely seem romantic to me. Before I get the rebuttal of couple A touched and you said it wasn't romantic, what about that? Let me explain something. As I mentioned above, half of these touches are coming off some pretty huge things I've noticed in the narrative. Mako and Korra have always shared physical contact as a form of affection or support. That hasn't changed. The only times we didn't... You guys are the worst. Oh my god. Mare says the only time we didn't see that contact was in book 3 for obvious reasons. Again, everyone should just be free to interpret things they wish. That's just how I see it. I can't see it. Okay. Okay. Done.
Never a new story.
Okay.
And what this all...
God.
Okay.
What this all leading to... Is there going to get buried at the end of that
scene? Was there a thesis statement we could have diluted that down to?
Okay.
Who just hit their keyboard?
Allie. Here's what I take it.
That wasn't me!
Who was the mystery of the keyboard? Okay.
The mystery keyboard slammer.
So I disagree with a lot of what's being said here. Not all of it. I think that she. I really like Mare's analysis of the fire dagger and how that's like a reversion of their like the relationship in the past. I think that's
inversion.
I think that's good analysis. However, I would interpret that. I still think that doesn't mean like they're interacting romantically,
it's
right? So. Here's my big issue is when Mare says, this post was a little bit in response to me, but I'm,
passive aggressive.
Not really, but I basically said the whole, Coronople shoulder touching thing, why that doesn't mean on Tumblr. And she says, and one other thing she says, I'm sick of people acting like there's some great buildup has to occur between them to get back together when that's simply not the case. So here's the deal. Yes, it does have to occur. That's what, like,
yeah.
So like, it's as if like, tomorrow they could just say, hey, want to get back together? Like, yeah.
That's not how relationships work after you've broken up.
Two people changed.
Well, yeah.
Korra has changed the most. Mako has changed very little. To me, if they got together, they'd be like, oh, Korra had to change so they could work as a couple. That's not okay. No.
That's my thing. Like, that's my thing. The whole thing where she was, I mean, I do agree with her that it was nice that it was like a role reversal where he was stopping her from making a bad decision and now she's stopping him. Yep. But to me, that's just Korra development. It's not their relationship's development. It's just Korra.
And also, I didn't really think they balanced each other out. And I'm going to reference, just as I've heard this a lot with the Zatara argument of opposites attract, Korra and Mako, just like Zuko and Katara, are very similar, hot-headed, stubborn people. They don't balance each other out. They do a lot of the same things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, happened at the end of season 2, was literally they were like...
Yeah, they were at each other's throats.
They were like, this doesn't work because we can't...
Because we're too similar.
Yeah, then that's the problem, is that they're not opposites. They're just literally two similar people, that they're both very extremely abrasive. So that doesn't mean they can't get back together. It's just the point is there would have to be a huge buildup, because you don't just – you break up with someone and you don't see each other for 3 years. You don't just magically say the next day, hey, let's get back together. No, there has to be a buildup, because at this point it's not even, you know, the stuff we saw in season 3 where it was like he was being awkward. It's now we've not seen each other for 3 years.
And yeah, they went on a field trip, but since the field trip wasn't overtly romantic, well, they can't just be together. There has to be some sort of buildup.
I can boil it down to three things, which are a clear differentiator of how Macorians are interpreting things and how everyone else is, that's leading to the difference of what's going on here. One is the importance of a past romantic relationship between Mako and Korra. A lot of Macora analysis that says they could just get back together pretty soon is predicated on the fact that they had previously had a romantic relationship and they said they always loved each other, and
I have a question. Have they ever tried to do that in real life? Because
what is that?
I'm not gonna talk, but...
People are shipping it. Yeah.
I don't want to get into detail about that, but
yeah,
I will tell you that's not what happens.
So
I am high-fiving you. Thank you.
My response to the previous romantic relationship would be, it's been 2 seasons since they've been together in terms of our perspective, and it's been over 3 years since they've been together from their perspective. It's not just like that it's not like they're close to a romantic relationship, really. They hadn't really even seen each other. They hadn't seen each other for 3 years. They hadn't interacted much during book 3 at all.
As far as we know, this is happening in the course of a week. Like, we don't know how, like, these things are moving very quickly. They haven't spent a lot of time together, like, with Korra back.
There hasn't been much time for them yet to get, like, re-get together and stuff like that. Okay, number 2 is the importance of the awkward hug in book 3. The ultimatum.
After he was like, sorry, I hugged you.
Something like that, I don't know.
Ben's laughing, so I don't
Yeah. things in book.
I think it was in like this, just after the stakeout, wasn't it?
Aren't we talking about
they,
the
like,
ultimatum?
They were like
Asami, right?
Korra.
I don't know.
I'm just loving all the fake Makora evidence, even though I'm pretty sure they're going to end up together.
Well,
for
that's the final discussion.
That's the funny part.
The book three thing is that. So
that's why I'm laughing.
There was some romantic feelings and awkwardness, obviously, in book three. I think we all acknowledge that, but it was not a major part of the narrative, nor was it seemingly building up to anything. It was just kind of there as a result of the previous awkwardness in previous season. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's leading to something.
And there was also shared awkwardness with Asami at the beginning.
And there's also Asami.
And even Mako addressed it himself in the recap episode.
And so that's the third one, is the recap episode. Mare sees the recap episode as Mako presenting his side of his relationship with Korra, and that's very big, and he's saying how much she means to him, and this is evidence that Mako still has feelings for her and that they're going to get back together, and I just don't think that it really means much of anything, the recap episode.
And there's no reverse either.
There's also no reverse. The season had zero evidence that Korra still has feelings for
Mako. Even with book three, there was zero evidence with Korra.
You could have interpreted that hug that they
kept the camera on her pretty long when they hugged, though.
Wow, Jeff being sassy, jeez.
Well, I think it'd be a great disservice.
You know how long they kept the camera on Korra and Asami when they hugged? Longer.
Oh, yeah. It's true.
Okay.
Just a blush.
I want to say one thing, that even though I hate Mako, and we're all aware of this, and I just dislike him so much as a character, I think it'd be a big disservice to his character. No, listen, I think it'd be a big disservice to his character if this was all about Mako still being in love with Korra and they got together. Like, it would be a disservice to his character.
It would be a disservice to her character, too.
Yes,
yeah,
definitely.
It would be a disservice
to
Korra.
And
not
it
even
would be a
Mako.
Disservice to you
I
and everyone
Mako,
else.
I was
what
saying
is that?
That well, it's because Makorians love Mako, so that's why I said that.
So, there's one other thing that I saw that pissed me off today on Tumblr. I'm going to call them out by name. But one of the things she's posted is that it's really annoying to see people not interpret these Mako and Korra's interactions as romantic. Mako and Korra inherently have a romantic relationship, she said in all blood.
Guys, what?
Where is she? Who is this
what
lady?
What season are you watching?
She says Mako and Korra inherently have a romantic relationship. Okay.
All right, I have to go
so
into the Korra tag to find her.
I take
not
a ton of issue with this statement because it's really close to homophobic.
Yes.
This is implied. Mako and Korra have a inherently romantic relationship. Two girls can't inherently have a romantic relationship, right? Also, this just degrades like any sort of like actual buildup of romance or friendship. It's just like, oh, the male lead and the female lead that are both attracted get together, and that's how they inherently have a romantic relationship in the show, and that's how this works. Anyway, I don't mean to personally attack, but like, I just really didn't like that.
I do.
Well, that's the attitude. That's the problem that I have with the whole, well, they dated in the past, so what's like, who cares? They're not dating right now. I don't like. It doesn't matter to me that they used to date.
Hello. Which again, I'm gonna reiterate. Have you ever tried to redate? Have you ever tried to get
redate
back together
redate
with someone?
Have you ever
like
tried to date? Is the
because
better question exactly.
Let me tell you,
you want stories.
Oh, I want stories.
Yes.
Well, you're
I'm
not
pretty
getting
sure I've heard these stories, but
you probably have.
So, like, I think there's a difference between saying that. Like, there's an importance of them having a past romantic relationship and saying that they inherently...
No, for me, those two things, like, they go together. That's my thing.
They
is
could
that
go together, but
that up
this,
is
on a different, this is on a different level. Saying they inherently have a romantic relationship implies a lot of things that just stress the importance of their past romantic relationship does
well,
not.
I feel like a lot when they stress the past romantic relationship, that's what they mean, though, is that they're, a lot of it is because of it. Like, that's their whole point, is that they used to date, and that's because they used to date, they will always date, and they will always have a romantic relationship.
And that's kind of the same thing with I will always love you in book two.
This is something that bugs me no matter what context. And if the attitude of like my interpretation has to be right, and if you don't see it, you're just like a bigot or an idiot or something. Like,
no.
Here's a radical idea for the end. Korra don't need no man. Elsa didn't
that's
need
my,
no
yes
man.
Yeah, what a romantic ending. Like, Korra can just be happy. I just want Korra to be happy.
Korra X happiness.
Yes, so, exactly. I shook Korra with happiness.
I don't even remember what I was going to say anymore.
I think that
past romantic relationship it means an inherent romantic relationship in the future is just not like an accurate perception of how the world
ridiculous
works.
Like, do you know how relationships work?
I mean, I don't, but like,
do we not have a
basic perception.
Dylan, not you, this girl.
I mean, I don't know.
Like, the definition of breakup is pretty clear.
Anyway, this annoys me. So also people are like, okay, so these people who aren't seeing this as romantic are going to see in four episodes. They're going to get together in the finale and they're going to see. And what I say to that is, we will see because I'm pretty sure that they're not going to be together before in a possible epilogue. And I'm almost very convinced of that. Because Ben's like, oh, this is all nonsense anyway, but they are going to get together in the end. I don't think that's a given anymore because they haven't built up them at all, and we only have four plot-heavy episodes left in the entire series. I don't think there's time to get them back into a relationship.
Which, if there's no canon ending, y'all better get ready because that means anything's game.
Oh no, that's going to be terrible. Yes. Everything's going to be shit.
No, if there's no canon ending, it automatically means Coruscant.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, probably. Since it has the most canon evidence of recent.
Yeah, for real.
I think I'm going to claim that Wu and Korra is going to be... No,
Wu
and Korra...
If there's
no definitive romantic ending, Wu and Korra is happened. Okay.
Korra don't need no man.
I will hear nothing else.
Mako need a man.
Wuko is real.
Also, Wuko is real, obviously.
Wuko is real.
Ben, your laugh is the best thing.
Anyway, I realize this discussion could have came off as super hating on Macquarians. I apologize for
giving
up.
Well, I don't care.
See, I was trying to be kind of objective, and then we have people laughing at what I'm saying. And so that's
funny.
What just needs to be recognized that all the ship wars in the fandom are ridiculous. Like, all of this is ridiculous.
Honestly, I would say that.
And honestly, that's kind of why I was laughing, because, you know, even if what he's saying isn't inherently funny, like he wasn't telling a joke, this whole shipping thing just hurts my brain so much.
It feels like
you want to see yourself with.
Yeah.
That's honestly what happens in shipping.
But like, that's going to sound really mean. I'm not going to say that.
Like,
what?
That's new for you.
So like, wow, Allie not saying, yeah, oh, wow, that's true. Allie not saying something mean. So, basically, like, one, I don't understand just watching this. Here's the deal. In general, you're allowed to watch shows from any angle you want to. If you want to watch a show with romance primarily in mind, you can. Maybe not watching the show correctly, but you can if you want to. It gets into this terrible territory if you start to say this ending won't be good or the show better have the ending that blank ship happens, right?
Yeah.
Which I don't want this to get into that territory for any ship side because most likely is that nothing's going to happen.
That was me 9 years old in Katang and I was going to turn the television off if Zatara happened. I'm very glad I'm not in that place right now. there's no reason to act like that.
It's like, well, for me, the finale would be there's the finale on is the potential to be the greatest thing I've ever seen because I'm so invested in Korra, and then there's the finale which is potentially the greatest thing I've ever seen, so invested in Korra, and of course Sami happened, and that's like even one step above.
Yes, exactly.
But like I can still think the finale is going to be the greatest thing ever, even like if the ship does not happen, right? Like, it's not that important, honestly. From a societal angle, it is potentially more important than anything else on this entire show, but that's another story.
It's kind of like with Frozen. Like, I know some people who didn't like it because, but this just seems appropriate to bring up. But I know somebody who's actually upset that Anna and Kristoff didn't get married at the end.
You're
like
kidding.
I know, and I'm like, oh no, because
different.
In a
post-canon
universe, Elsa
and Kristoff
just live happily ever after.
No, Elsa and Jack Frost.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was a thing.
I do like those two.
Fan fiction is weird.
Oh, really?
There's a truer statement has never been said on this podcast. Fan fiction is weird.
Where's the Wuko fan fiction? Like, come on, guys.
I need some of
that. I'm working on it.
That's
true. It's happening.
The sad thing is I'm writing fan fiction right now.
Nice.
Yes. Right now.
Wow, what a writing process. We're in your ear as you're writing. That's
okay,
great.
I would like to say before we move on, I apologize if we got too harsh or offended people. And,
I don't intend,
these people are bad people, but I did not intend that for the podcast. Okay.
We are brutally honest.
I was just laughing at Ben's like hyperventilating laugh.
Yeah, no, like the laughing thing is just not necessarily laughing at people, it's just laughing at people laughing, you know, but whatever.
The thing is that we're all terrible people together, so it worked out fine.
Oh, it worked fine. Yeah, that's how it works. Okay, okay, I have some more, I have another email to get to. The last discussion topic I'd like to bring up is the future. Jack Gherkin says, Korra Christmas list. One, a feels ending. Go Game of Thrones if you must. 2, 4-part finale. Sorry, Jack Gherkin, that's not happening. 3, the new White Lotus epic fight with Katara, Zuzu, Toph, White and Lotus. Baby daddies and children.
Oh, like the old people.
Zuzu.
Perhaps taking back Ba Sing Se. Baby who? Again, or defending Republic City. Zuzu. 4, I don't know, a Korra to ride majestically into battle on the dragon bird from that season we do not speak.
Yes,
<I'm
glad. laughs>
Now it has to have Bowen's face on it.
5, yes. Kuvira's wedding, red and or purple weddings are so in.
Oh my god. Yes.
It's the ninth day for a red wedding.
I'm totally okay with
6,
this.
6, even more Bob Squad. Yes. And yes. 7, more feels. Okay.
I really like
also
this.
Also 8, soundtrack.
Yes.
This is things to happen at the end of the series, not like.
Wait, yeah, we need a soundtrack at the end of the series.
Show Knight says, the great Show Knight, the great and wonderful Show Knight. I really enjoyed this week's number one Wuko ship. I really enjoyed this week's episode. Basically, everything I wanted to happen happened. One thing that really stood out to me was how great of a leader Honora seems to be. I'm censoring her post, Honora. She's actively trying to correct and learn from the mistakes of past generations, though I'm wondering if she's going to join in on the fight at the end. Seems like something huge needs to happen to initiate. It, though.
I did not leave the South Side for this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, can we just turn this into Mean Girls references instead of Frozen references? That'd be great.
Yeah,
great. Okay.
Is Frozen not must. Mean Girls?
Oh, I mean, it is, right?
Yeah.
It is.
Everything is Mean Girls. Allie. Think
about it. Good.
It is.
Okay, so.
Every cookie is bite-sized if you want girls. It hard enough.
Okay, so quickly let's discuss that clip that we all just watched. So.
We didn't do that?
Not really. So Toph is back.
Oh,
your reaction!
All of my dreams, talking about Christmas list, everything I ever wanted is happening.
Chief, so yeah, that's just that scene is just like the series. Hey, the series could just end now, Delaney, right? Like,
yeah, this is all I wanted.
I love how unfazed Lynn was. She was just like, "Oh, hey, Chief, haven't seen her in like who knows how many years."
What I was
also Bolin.
I was too Bolin. Yeah, Bolin freaks
believable.
Out too. I was too Bolin. Focused on like the fact that she's back. What did she say?
She said, like, "Hey, chief," bother. And then she said, "All the prisoners have been moved."
Oh, okay.
Well she said, "All the prisoners have been moved," then said, "Hey, chief."
Oh, they moved. Where did they move the prisoners? Oh, interesting.
Yeah, she just said
they were screaming.
Ooh, so they're gonna move away from Zhaofu now?
Yeah, yeah, because they were about to go down there, and she's like, "Don't be stupid."
So what might happen now is that they just bring Toph back to Republic City, right? Like,
and then everyone gets, and then
they're gonna go after where the prisoners are.
And then Katara just rides in on a wave.
Yeah, but like, where are the prisoners?
Here I come!
Help!
Oh.
<at this dragon. laughs>
That's the best thing that's been said.
Don't stop!
Here I come!
Okay.
Can someone draw me that,
please? You guys can see it.
A wave of awesome.
What's the A plot?
A wave of awesome.
I had my arms out.
What's the A plot going to be of this episode? That's
the three Bei Fongs. Obviously, Dylan. That's why they didn't say that. Obviously.
That's not the episode. That's the clip.
No, that's the episode title. I'm telling you,
Dylan. I swear to God, if that ends up being the episode title, you're going to owe me money.
That's the worst. This
is the final. This episode title makes sense for once. This is what it is.
No,
this has to be the episode title.
It's
amazing. Yes.
This is
the name of the episode.
The way that Nick structures.
What about Sue though? There's four Bei Fongs.
What?
There's no, it's generations.
It's three generations of Bei Fong. Yeah, that's the clip.
Why is the three Bei Fong? Sounds like a three Stooges.
Shut
is
up.
Is it the three generations?
It's it's not the episode name, okay?
It is the episode name.
Okay. By the way, side note, I wonder if they're going to have time to prepare a clip from the finale.
Dylan, I'm going to bet you your Tumblr password that it's
you're not getting
the episode
my Tumblr
title.
Password. I will take you up on that. What do
uh-oh,
I get if I win?
Oh, here we go.
Uh-oh.
What do I get?
I get your Tumblr for a day.
What do I get if I win? I get your Tumblr?
I'll think of something. Because I don't have anything you want.
I'm 100% sure that's not the episode title. Okay.
Wait,
your Facebook
you guys heard
password.
This. I get his
no, yeah,
this
is it's on documentation now.
Yeah, this
you
is
guys, Mel, you don't know how Nick structures the files. That's not how it works. Like,
this is the name of the episode
just
title.
Wait until Friday.
The episode title.
When Dylan's Tumblr's mine.
This is what Mel wants because she couldn't be host today. She wants your Tumblr.
I was almost host.
It's your birthright.
10 long years of fancy.
Okay, well, no, but so we have the potential.
Also, didn't I call it Toph and Lynn are talking to each other? This is all I ever wanted.
I know, right? So they have the potential of the three generations of Bei Fongs as a plotline. They have the potential of Varric and Asami as a plotline. But then what's the Korra plotline?
What's the what?
What's Korra the Korra plot? Plotline? Yeah.
Who knows?
Korra. No, I'm kidding.
Korrasami, that's the plot.
Korrasami and Mako all walk into a bar?
Well, no, but actually Korra and Mako are like are still alive.
And then they get drunk.
Everyone else is doing things.
We could do more with the spirit vines.
Okay, we need to talk about how did Mako get to go on this big adventure? Last time he left Wig for like 10 minutes, Wig almost died. Why did Mako get to go on this big journey?
Because the plot demanded.
Yeah, I just realized that. Who was protecting Wu?
I'm really curious to see what the domes do.
Yeah, like...
Yes!
Yes! It only took years, but it's gonna happen.
Yes!
Frankly, I don't think Wu needs protection. They could just... I don't know.
I did that already.
Oh my god, I need Toph and Wu to meet.
Are we still talking
about... Wait, can we talk about Bolin, though?
What is that from, Jeff, by the way? That quote.
Or not.
What?
Link to the where that quote is from.
What about Bolin?
But okay, so was I had something to say and you all are talking nonsense.
that's what this podcast is.
What I don't even
hashtag.
Know.
Hashtag.
Hashtag nonsense. That's no, it. Oh no, hashtag base no, mine was nonsense too. Hashtag begin dismantling the domes.
Oh, not this again, though. Something else.
Oh wait, she did say begin dismantling.
The domes are already dismantled.
Why was there a surprise for me?
What's happening right now? What are you talking about?
No, she dismantled.
Oh, that wasn't about us. Okay, that quote.
Okay.
Well, I
think
the reviewers. Is it not?
I think
not?
The reviewers of the show are very good. Like, I think Oliver. Sabat
it will be.
Is
Jeff has
great.
A point.
Like, he gave this episode an A. I'm totally in agreement with him. I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know, Allie. Was it about us?
What else?
It's going to be if it's not right now.
No, like, what do you mean? Like, what do you think they're doing something with the domes? Like, do you think they would have pointed that out in the clip if they weren't?
No, I think she's just taking away their defense.
I think it's just
think
a big deal because, like...
It has to do with what?
I don't know what it's going to be. Maybe she's going to use it as, like, a test explosion site for a new super weapon
that
or something.
That would make sense.
Is Zhao Fu going to turn into District 13?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Stop.
Okay,
I was thinking more Hiroshima because it's literally an atomic bomb.
Yeah, no, I was talking about like Bikini Atolls where we test atomic weaponry.
That's basically just what I'm doing.
Allie, you're not able to see it yet, are you?
Allie,
see, what? I haven't seen it yet. I see it.
Allie, get on your stuff. They dropped radiation on District 13.
I know, but still, I was thinking more real life, and no, I haven't seen Mockingjay.
That's what
yet,
I mean. That's
I was
thinking more real life.
Okay, that's enough for this podcast.
Oh really?
I think we've had enough.
Sorry, I apologize.
No, at that point, Voldemort had already taken over the ministry.
It's almost 1 a.m. I'm starting to laugh like an idiot.
That's been
this is what tired does
this
for
whole
you.
Podcast. I've been your main host, Dylan. Co-host. Co-hosts have been Mel, Ben, Delaney, Allie, Jeff. Technical directors AJ Kevin, musical credits the Yoshida Brothers, Jeremy Zachman, Luke Chick, Lover, and Banner by Kevin, Dong Fing's on by Jake, special contributor Garrett, contributors Dira, Nick, Devin, Lexi, Colin, Gretchen, Britt, Nathan, Jamie. I have to change windows. G Millionaire, Sierra Miss, Nick at Night, Rudin Tweety, Coin, Fetchin, Opal, Iroh, J Nora.
He donated again, so he's G Millionaire.
Wow, you're behind on the times.
I don't listen to. Never mind.
You don't listen to this podcast. Mel admitted it.
No, even I listen to it.
Allie actually
I'm
does.
I'm in Japan.
Yeah, Allie actually listened. That was surprising.
Allie got mad at me because I finally watched her reaction video and I was like, oh, this is good. And she was. Yeah. She said something I can't say.
Allie's YouTube famous now and her best friend Mel didn't even know about it. Like, come on. Dongbufeng.net/podcast if you want to see our bios and if you want to see donation information you should. We've gotten some good iTunes reviews recently.
Kickstarter.
And now that
the
I
one that was like nice white noise to
listen. Well, that's
Brit,
a good
right? That was the
did
best
Brit
one.
Write that?
That's a good thing though. Like what people think of white noise
I mean
is a
that's
good
when
thing.
I did listen funny enough yeah, that's when I listened I was sleep. Washing the dishes when I was listening to the podcast.
You can review us on iTunes. Don't give us negative reviews. Thank you. Follow
that's
these.
Very
if you can't say anything nice,
please?
Don't say anything
yeah,
at all.
Yeah, didn't you learn
you
that?
You have freedom of speech unless
watch
it's against
Bambi.
Us.
You can send us emails, Dylan@dongbufeng.net. Someone on Tumblr asked me what the podcast email was and then didn't send me an email. So I don't understand. I was like, well, this is exciting. Someone anonymously needs to know the podcast email. Is this Nick covertly reaching out to give us an interview? Like, I was like.
Was it Janet? Maybe it was Janet.
Yeah, it was Janet on my Tumblr. Yeah. Yes.
Janet knows the email.
Anyway.
Yeah, wait. Like, we've already.
Allie. Janet also personally knows Allie from that clip that was.
Listen. traumatized, and so am I.
Follow dongbufang.tumblr.com for the clip that just came out where the first post that and other people send us voicemail. So there's 3 weeks of Korra left, 3 weeks of podcast. We're going to have a ton of stuff for the finale. The next 2 weeks will probably be out at normal times.
Pretty sure I have to take off from school.
Obviously.
Then back to me not being on.
I know, sad, but. Yeah, I'll be at school for the two. But then you'll be on for the... I assume since we'll have, like, 4 finale podcasts, you can make at least one of them.
So, 4?
Yes.
That's the plan.
In that case, that's a pretty good chance.
That's a pretty good chance.
One podcast for each act of the episode.
We should just do, like, multiple video podcasts.
Well, yeah, we'll have at least one live podcast, probably. And then we'll have the discussion on Friday, and then we'll have another... The tradition is that you have a finale discussion, and then you have another finale discussion, like, the next day. We've actually done that for the past few seasons. And
did we ever do that for Avatar?
We did that for the series finale. Yeah, that was the only one we recovered live. Yeah, we actually didn't come on the podcast until after book 2, if you remember. But yeah,
I do remember.
We did that
because of Korra. Like every season finale is self-contained.
Yeah, so it's like a series finale. Yeah. Okay.
Any
last thoughts other than excitement about Toph being back?
Toph. I'm gonna be dead next week, guys. I'm going to die. Wow.
Well, I apologize if anybody came to this podcast wanting to hear about Korra instead got life story, but
sorry, but not sorry.
No, it's great.
This is one of those podcasts where I say at the
end, if you break up with someone, don't automatically assume you will get back together.
There's your life lesson. This is one of the ones where I have to apologize for this podcast, so I'm sorry.
No, you don't!
I'm sorry.
Why are you apologizing?
Apologize for like one in every 3 podcasts. You know what? It's usually when Ali and I are on together. Don't think I haven't noticed.
That's 100% accurate.
Okay. There's a connection.
There's a one-to-one correspondence between ones I have to apologize for and ones
there's
you
some correlation them. There.
Correlation, yeah.
Hey. Correlation.
I suspect causation. Okay. What do we want to end on?
Chief.
No, that's not this episode.
That's the next episode.
I don't know, but
talk about the clip in the podcast, and we should end on things in the podcast.
I should say that our post got 14 notes.
Wow, that was sassy.
Oh, yay.
Well, our conversations, people think we're funny.
You're talking with a stick.
I like that Allie and I continue to have conversations while everyone's talking over us.
What are we going to end on?
Can we finish this, please?
Yeah, what are we ending on?
We're ending on Mel gets Dylan's Tumblr on Friday.
I need something if I win the bet, which I am.
I'm going to think of something. Someone's going to help me think of something.
Okay. Facebook password.
I need to think of something good because I have nothing you want.
I get your Facebook. That'd be great. No, it wouldn't. But
what did he say?
Your Facebook. Dude.
I'll give you my Facebook password.
Wow.
If I can remember it. That's a bad
idea. Wow, that's not a good idea.
How about Pop-Pop?
Pop-Pop. I like
Pop-Pop.
Can
we add on... Or not add on.
The bet is on.
What is my Facebook password?
I don't know. What was a dumb line?
Elsa.
I'll always be inside you.
No!
Whatever she said.
That's Mel's Facebook. I don't know if we heard that, but anyway.
I'll end on that.
Mel's Facebook? What?
I'll always be inside you.
Elsa. That's your password. Okay.
Okay. That's a good guess, but that's not it.
I don't care what you end on. 1, 2, 3, Pop Pops.
I'll always be inside you.
Here I come.
What the heck?
That was a good one.